afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors regular meeting on March 4th, 2020. Will you please stand with allegiance to the flag in a moment of silence?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And we're ready for the adoption of the agenda.
So made.
Second.
All right, it has been moved by Mr. Weaver and second by Mrs. Iger to accept the agenda as presented. All in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Chair votes aye. Now we have the county administrator's report.
So Mrs. Booker, so let's see, we've got a few things reported to board members this evening. So a couple staff and community recognitions. So one, the Virginia Department of Social Services, they have what's called a local review team. So they recently did kind of it's kind of an annual audit, a local audit of our local Fluvanna Department of Social Services. They underwent this year-long state financial review, and it looks at budget line expenditures, state and federal reimbursements to the county, and the overall accuracy of the reimbursement. And the state level concluded the review this month and released the final report, and Social Services was congratulated by BDSS, and there were no formal findings or anything issued on their behalf. And a big thanks goes out to Ann May, who serves as the financial services manager for the local Fluvanna Department of Social Services. Some citizens and I think Mrs. Eager and some others had commented about our roads were looking a little trashy along Route 15. Mr. Hickman and his staff reached out to the CVRJ inmates and Central Virginia Regional Jail, and then in turn, they work with the inmates that come out and clean county roads. Well, they did a nice big long pickup along from on Route 15 from Zion's Crossroads all the way down to Hunter's Lodge Road, and they ended up picking up 30 bags of trash. I think they're going to continue at another point. They're going to be going from Hunter's Lodge down to Palmyra as well, and I'm sure they'll probably, if you've been along there, there's been a lot of debris and trash along there too, and then at some point we'll get them to go along 250 as well. So. I think Kelly was saying after they had been there, it looked night and day along the roadside there. So hopefully you all noticed the same thing.
Yeah.
And like I said, big thanks to the Central Virginia Regional Jail. It's good for the county to be able to get those inmates that are on kind of a little bit of a work release to get out there and help us out a little bit.
That helps everyone.
It does. Right. So on March 28th, so the county's having a community connections fair, and really the community connections fair is really a way to bridge organizations who need volunteers and volunteers who want to connect with organizations and give back to their community. So on Saturday, March 28th, between 10 and 3 p.m., we're going to have the community connections fair. It's going to be at the Fluvanna High School. Currently, right now, there are over 50 vendors registered. It's informative, and there's fun activities for kids that are going to be there. There's door prizes. Food's going to be provided by the Fluvanna High School Culinary Arts Program. And if you go on the county website as well, we've got kind of have a whole page kind of dedicated to what's going to be happening that day for the Community Connections Fair. And that whole thing was really kind of stemmed from Carol Tracy Carr, who acts as the county's volunteer coordinator, and then some groups from, some of the Fluvanna Leadership Development Program. They've got some subcommittees that have been really kind of taking this on, and Ms. Harris also kind of sits in on those and has been kind of coordinating some of these efforts as well. But like I said, a lot of the volunteers, they've been doing a lot of great work to get this Community Connections Fair set up. So again, it's gonna be March 28th. So coming up here shortly, if you remember, the county used to have an old maintenance shop down at Carriageburg, next to the ball fields. The old maintenance shop was demolished, and the Department of Forestry asked if they could build a pole barn on that property there. Well, time and time goes by, and they finally got their approvals from the state and their funding to move forward. So pretty soon, probably within the next week, you should probably start seeing construction happening of the Department of Forestry's new pole barn on the county property there at Carysbrook, right next to the adjoining baseball field. So construction's anticipated to take 90 to 120 days. They're scheduled to work Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. And they also reached out, you know, just as a courtesy, they wanted to make sure that they weren't going to interfere with, you know, the youth baseball program that's going on. So we gave them a schedule so they can make sure that they're kind of done with their operations and construction, and so there's not a lot of debris happening when the kids are out there doing games and practice. So like I said, just if you see any construction going on down there, we're not going rogue, and we're not building something that that the board hasn't approved.
Thank you.
What's that? Yeah, the Department of Forestry, they're going to be using it to house their equipment. They're, I think they've got a dozer. And
they've had a dozer parked behind Company 1.
Yeah.
It just sits in the weather. So they're putting up a pole barn to put the dozer out of the weather.
Yeah.
To just help take care of it.
It'll just, you know, prolong the equipment, just as the county's trying to do, try and get some covered spaces for its equipment. It'll make that equipment last longer. VDOT's going to be, and the timing of this is slightly unfortunate, but VDOT's going to be holding a town hall meeting for the roundabout at 53 and 618. It's going to be March 18th, which is a board meeting day, and they're going to be holding that town hall meeting from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. At the Fairway Clubhouse in Lake Monticello, and they'll be there to answer questions about the 53 and 618 roundabout. I'm sure there'll be questions asked about the Monish Gate, Riverside, South Boston intersections, and they'll also be available to answer any other questions. So unless for some reason that we decide on March 18th we don't need a work session at 4 p.m., you know, supervisors could attend. But as it stands right now, unless we get a lot of budget work done between now and then,
we're gonna
have to meet. So.
Yeah.
And then it wouldn't be a meeting without kind of just bringing this up here, but obviously the coronavirus is you hear it in the news and from state, federal, and everything. The one positive thing to start off with is there are no positive cases in Virginia. There's been lots of coordination between the Commonwealth, Virginia Department of Health, from the state, kind of regional and local level. Kind of continuing their monitoring efforts and developing plans. And as well, the county is going to make sure that we've got a plan in place too if the need occurs. But obviously, like anything with any type of flu virus season, you know, obviously we're going to be doing some extra cleaning efforts in county buildings, you know, when we have lots of people, just to make sure that germs are taken care of. And then, you know, just daily etiquette of, you know, wash your hands and stay home if you're sick, and if you're sneezing, make sure you cough into something, not into the air. So, but anyway, we also, if there's information that anyone wants about this, we also have kind of a link on our county page also of kind of about the coronavirus. There's links to the Virginia Department of Health. There's links to the CDC too, giving information about it. And, you know, if anything changes, we will certainly keep the board and staff well aware of what's happening. Or if, you know, if something happens where there's a positive case in Virginia, then we're going to have to start making some different alternative plans and creating more of an actionable plan.
Is there anything extra that our emergency people go through if they have to go to a home, or they have to pick up a patient? Do they wear masks, or is there anything that they do differently?
Yes, ma'am. We've actually stockpiled some extra masks.
Okay.
For that reason.
Right.
We got ahead of it because it was projected that there might be a shortage, so we've already ordered.
Okay.
Some.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah, and like I said, we're gonna there's some internal staff. We're probably gonna have a meeting next week just to kind of come up with, you know, we don't want to be too much of an alarmist, but we want to make sure that we're just prepared in case,
sure,
you know, have some type of plan in place. As far as some of the upcoming meetings, so we have a budget work session. Obviously, after this meeting, we have a budget work session at 7 p.m., but we also have a budget work session March 11th, next Wednesday at 7 p.m. And then again on March 18th, we have a work session at 4 p.m. And then at the 7 p.m. regular meeting is when the board sets their advertised tax rate and fiscal year 21 budget for advertising. March 25th, again, if we need it. And these are some to be determined, but you know, I'm assuming we would probably still need a budget work session March 25th. And then April 1st, we have a 4 p.m. regular meeting and then 7 p.m. budget work session again. And that's all that I have for the board this evening. I can answer any questions if you have any.
Any questions? All right, thank you very much, sir. Caught me as soon as I put a pretzel on. Now I'll welcome the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, step to the witness chair, state your name, your address, and you have 5 minutes to speak to the board. Keep your comments on topic and directed to the board. Anyone wishing to speak?
Patty Rayner, Brooklyn Island. Yes, so, you know, I speak every week on taxes. I'm going to speak on taxes again. But I did want to throw in trash because that was something that you guys have worked on. And I just happened to be on Route 600 North Boston actually this week, and I was about 3 cars behind a truck that was carrying trash, and bags of trash were just flying off the truck. Actually, it was a state trooper, 2 cars in front of me. He actually pulled over and kicked it into the ditch because, and I don't know why he didn't like go up and question the truck driver, but that didn't happen. But if you ride down 600 North Boston, there's just massive amounts of trash. And that's kind of a cutthroat to get to Vanderbilt. I happen to be going to Vanderbilt myself. But, you know, in addition to the other roads that you guys talked about, that's another one I think that probably needs to have some attention as well. And then I'm going to talk about taxes because I talk about taxes every week. And I know that you guys are going to be voting on the tax rate. But, you know, I gave some examples last week, and there's actually a week before, there's just hundreds of examples out there. You know, they're available to all board members. Actually, you know, they're just public information that you could go look at. But I just picked another one, just as a Lake Monticello, because I feel like Lake Monticello, all the community subdivisions are getting hit the hardest. And these are the areas where it's the highest amount of development, but has the least amount of acreages. And Lake Monticello in particular, this property, one property that I looked up, it's 1.268 acres, and it was assessed at $616,600. Well, that parcel of property is being taxed at $5,703.55. And if we compared that to the property that I gave you guys an example of a couple of weeks ago, the 217 acres that was paying $903 in taxes and was sold for $950,000. I think it's pretty clear that, you know, that's just an easy loophole for people with these large parcels of property to reduce their tax rate. And I understand that, you know, the assessments are based on the comps in the area and the house and 2 acres of land. So that's not my question because I understand how that works. My question is on these large parcels of land that are getting these reduced taxes. If they are sold and kept in land use, there's no rollback taxes. It still remains at the lowest taxable rate with that land use loophole. You know, for the people that are in Taylor's Ridge and Broken Island and Lake Monticello and Seven Oaks and, you know, all the subdivisions in that area, in particular, like Lake Monticello, they pay additional dues in addition to the taxes that they're, so they're getting hit particularly hard. And I keep talking about this because, you know, everybody's asking for, you know, increases for salaries, for teachers, for our police officers. And we could have that money for those salary increases just by having a level field where everybody's paying fair taxes. The same fair rate across the board. That would almost bring in $4.6 million. That's a lot of money and can pay a lot, or bring those salaries to a competitive level for our police officers and our teachers. So I feel very strongly about the taxes, as you know. and I'm probably going to talk about it for the next 3-4 weeks too. But I just would ask that the board, you know, go look at some of these properties and you know, compare the amount of taxes that are being paid by these people with the smallest amount of property. And these teachers that are trying to get raises and these police officers, they live in these communities of Lake Monticello and Taylor's Ridge. And that right there is their tax. That's their increase. That's their salary increase right there. If even if you say it's a 1%, that's 1% of, you know, it could be 600,000 or 300,000 or whatever it is. And in addition to that, you know, they pay that extra taxes just to try to get a salary increase to be competitive. But I'm just about fair. You know, I just want to see it be fair and level across the board. Fair taxation for all. And I know that that is something that is approved by our board. You guys can decide, you know, that we could be like Buckingham and not have land use. Because the board gets to decide that.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Seeing none, I will now close first round of public comment. We have no public hearing, so we're going to move forward with our action matters. First on the agenda is A, public hearing advertising for the FSD rate increase. Mr. Dahl.
So, Mr. Chair and members of the board, I can kind of go back through the presentation from last week if the board would like and just kind of give an update of where we are. And I'll just kind of just briefly touch on a few things really quick here. But as you remember, we discussed that back in 2014 was the last time that FSD rates increased in the system, and it was discussed at that time that we would continue to every couple of years look at doing incremental rate increases just to kind of keep the system viable, to make sure we're maintaining the expenses and everything. So again, the red outline is just an outline of the Fort Union Sanitary District. Current FSD rates, kind of what they were at that time. Let's see here. And this is, hang on a second. This is a wrong presentation. We go back, we were showing what the rates were, what the board went to. Back in 2014, the board went to option 5, which those were the increase of rates. At that point, projecting on expenditures of the Fort Union Sanitary District system and what the projected revenues were, the system was going to basically break even after a 20-year period of time. Into this model, it also took into account doing $500,000 worth of upgrades on the system in that 20-year period of time. Well, since these rates went into effect in 2014, if you remember, we ended up doing better than what the original projections were. We ended up getting some additional revenues from the cell tower leases that we have on our towers. We allocated costs a little differently to more accurately put those costs to all of our water and utility systems. And some of the capital expenditures that were originally projected in there, they did not occur within the years between 2015 and 2019. And this even includes FSD payoff, a note to the county. So as we said, previously prior to 2014, it was showing that the system was gonna be about $1.3 million short after a 20-year period of time. When the board approved the rates in 2014, as I said before, it was showing about breaking even after a 20-year period of time. Well, what actually ended up happening with the way the rates currently are, and if we stay on the track that we're on, they'll have about $440,000 in their system projected after the next 15-year period of time. Now, that doesn't take into account, it takes into account we had projected about $500,000 worth of increases for capital expenditures. We know for sure there's $200,000 for required current capital expenditures for two of the well systems. But what we had then projected is to maybe then put into effect that 2% every year increase, because just besides those big increases and those big capital expenditures, there's going to be additional requirements that need to happen on the FUSD lines as well, or even if we want to somehow expand the FUSD system down the road. So I came to the board, not last week, but the previous regular meeting to discuss doing a rate increase. And at that time, the board said, yes, move forward with the rate increase, the 2% increase. Let me go back a few slides. But the 2% increase would be up on top of the $21 for the minimum charge and the $11 for rates 2,000 gallons and above. And so, like I said, the board said, let's move forward with it. We're not gonna hold up the rate increase for getting a FUSD advisory committee meeting, because these were just rates that were needed. But we are actually currently looking for FUSD advisory committee members, because I think there's more things that are going to need to happen within the system, and we just want to make sure we've got an active committee ready to go. So to go back to the presentation. So this is basically what we were proposing: to advertise a public hearing. We would advertise the public hearing. The public hearing wouldn't take effect until April 15th at 7 p.m. And the below rates are what was being requested. That was the 2% over the existing rate. So $21 would go to $21.42 for the first 2,000 gallons, and everything above 2,001 gallons would go to from $11 to $11.22 per gallon. And I can answer any questions that the board has, or if they think we should do something different. But we kind of discussed this a couple meetings ago.
You mean $11.22 for every 1,000 gallons?
Yes.
So they're not going to put anything in the water bill to let people know?
No, we will.
We will
put something in the water bill,
okay.
And so they're notified. But we also, just from state requirements, we have to, because we're making an ordinance change to the rates, we have to advertise in the paper as well.
Right.
That's the requirement.
Yeah.
So do you think this is enough to cover what the repairs are needed?
I think right now it is. And then as we start developing our systems more, the main one is to get some of the main repairs to the main wells done. The system was with the rate increase that took place, and some of the allocations of expenses for personnel and some of the cell tower revenues, we ended up doing better than what was projected. But, we're going to need to increase the rates at another time. So instead of doing, instead of doing a big one at one time, let's incrementally do it, every couple of years and take a look at it at that point. And then 2 years from now, we may say we don't need to do it after we see how the revenues are doing and how the system's doing. But at this point, I think this is kind of taking in incremental baby steps to kind of take a look at it as we start moving forward.
So you're talking about a two-year frame, possibly, that you think there might be a raise. Because when you go from $21 to $21.42, that's a 2% raise.
Correct.
Which averages 33 one-hundredths of a penny for the last 6 years.
Yep.
33 one-hundredths of a penny increase, if you average that back the last 6 years. So I wonder, and then the other one, you're going from $11 to $11.22, which is less than 1%. So I just wonder when you would put that into a higher rate, whether that would be in 2 years or where we are.
I don't, Mr. Weaver, unless something drastically happens with the system, unless we have a lot of infrastructure capital needs that need to be fixed all at once, I think doing this incremental rate increase, and as we get some additional customers on and we look at some other opportunities, I think that the system will produce the revenue that's needed to move forward. Like I said, we should have done this sooner, but we just haven't, and now we're bringing it forward, and we're just taking an incremental increase for the rates.
Long as it works, it's all right with me.
And I think this is what they proposed 6 years ago when we did the last rate increase.
Correct.
We want to start doing a 2% increase every 2 years. We haven't done it for six. If we had three or four,
as long as we have the money to take care of the improvements and all.
And like I said, in this too, in that model to come up to this, we had $500,000 kind of set in there to do fixes and capital expenditures in the system. So the rate increase will support that, and plus after, you know, barring anything major happening to the system, any major repairs, there'll be some surplus at the end. So if there's, you know, something needed from a appreciation standpoint after, you know, a 15-year period, there's money in there for them to do those repairs without maybe having to take out debt to do it.
Mm-hmm. So, all right. Any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve county staff and the county's attorney to prepare and advertise a notice of a public hearing to be held on April 15, 2020 at 7 p.m. for a proposed increase to the monthly water rates of the Fauquier Union Sanitary District water system as follows. Base monthly charge includes the first 2,000 gallons of water usage, $21.42, and for each 1,000 gallons used for 2001 to 300,000 gallons, $11.22. And for each 1,000 gallons used in excess of 300,000 gallons, $11.22.
This is a public hearing. Do we have to open it first?
This is advertising.
This is advertising for the public hearing. This is an action matter, so we're taking a vote on this one.
Yeah. I second it.
Got a motion made by Mr. Booker and seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Mr. O'Brien is absent. B, public hearing advertisement for FY20, Science Crossroads Budget Amendment. Ms. McGyver.
Before Ms. McGyver goes really quick, just as a reminder too, we originally, my proposed budget, we had the $2.7 million in my proposed budget because we thought we could wait till July 1st and then kind of wrap in what we had projected to spend on the Science Crossroads project. But we're running short on proceeds, debt proceeds, and I'll let Ms. McGyver go from here once I get the brief up. But give me 1 second. Okay, there you go.
So I'm here again to ask for another advertisement for us, another public hearing on the 15th. As Mr. Dahl said, we had hoped to wait until FY21 to do the additional $2.75 million, but the project is moving along quickly, so we have found that we're going to have a shortfall before then. The current adopted budget for FY20 is $82,838,129 in revenues and expenditures, and we're asking for a $2.75 million increase in revenues and expenditures for the Zions Crossroads construction budget, which is around a 3% increase. The current remaining funds in the Zions Crossroads SNAP account as of January 31st of this year is $1,059,333. That includes remaining principal and all accrued interest. For February, we got about another $3,800 in.
And just as a kind of a backdrop, the SNAP account, once we take out the debt proceeds, we hold those proceeds in kind of an interest-bearing SNAP account. And then once we pay for some of the project costs, then we reimburse ourselves out of that SNAP account.
Is that with the bank, though?
No, it's not. It's through this estate non-arbitrage program, and no, it's not BACO.
Okay.
But we earn interest on some of the proceeds. We can't earn more interest than the interest that we're paying, but that's earned on those proceeds.
And I don't have the number right in front of me, but it's around $300,000 that we've earned in interest. So that's gone along.
In what length of period?
The length of time that we've had it out there when we took out.
So in 2017, so
about two and a half years.
Yeah.
So it's been a pretty good return.
Yeah.
As of right now, our current obligated contracts are $2,944,180. That's what we have already said that yes, we need to pay for. and we're anticipating additional cost of $115,343, which leaves us just over a $2 million shortfall of funds and what we currently have. We're asking for the 2.75 to have some contingency because we know there's more expenses to come. We just don't have exact figures on what that's going to be.
So, and if you remember, in all the budget years for the past probably two budget years, we've always kind of had a $3 million earmark dollar amount to pay for this project coming from fund balance. As we're kind of getting closer to the end, we're going to kind of whittle it down to 2.750 because we don't think it's going to be more than that. But there's still contingency because as Ms. MacGyver said, if you look at the last bullet, right now we're showing about $2 million, but we're asking for $2,750,000. And there may be a few other things that come up, but we are hoping that even the 2.75 is going to be on the high side. And just remember, if any contracts, just if you appropriate that budget amount, staff cannot obligate the board or obligate the board to additional contracts unless the board approves those contracts. So because it's such a large amount, we're coming to the board to get the appropriation first. So we've got the budget authority, and then as different contracts, if there's changes that come up, we'll bring those back to the board. But we're hoping that it'll be less than...
We're hoping it'll be closer to 2.5 that we actually need.
No. This is an overrun then. Is that right?
No, this was originally accounted for in fund balance. We originally had $3 million set aside in fund balance to cover the additional funds. It's just been kind of sitting there earmarked. We now think we're only going to need 2.75 and hopefully a little less than that. So this was originally planned for.
Yeah, when we took out the debt proceeds for this project in 2017, it was always the board's decision at that point to say we're going to take out some debt, but we're going to pay some cash for the project as well. And we had been talking $2.5 to $3 million when this project was coming about. And so for the past couple of fiscal years, during the budget process throughout the year, we have always kind of had a $3 million set aside there just to kind of holding that in reserve for this. Well, we're getting close to the end. The debt proceeds are about complete and almost completely been reimbursed back to the county. So we're looking at 2.750. Right now we're at 2 million, but we think it's going to be less than 2.750.
But with all these legal problems and all, when are we going to go over a certain contingency?
That's JRWA. That's JRWA.
Yes.
Different project.
Different separate fund.
Okay.
Now, here's my thing. I see 1 million written up there.
Yep.
It's already in the account.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying the 2 million. Counting that 1 million going against it.
So if you take the 2.9 plus 115 and subtract out the 1,059,000, that leaves you with the 2 million.
Yep. All right. So take the 1 million. We have 1 million left. You subtract almost the 2.9 million and subtract the 115. We're left with the 2 million shortfall.
Okay. All right, cool.
And like I said, we anticipate that there'll be more costs. We just don't know.
Just want to make sure.
And hopefully I'll be coming back to tell you we're putting money back in fund balance at the end of this.
I always like to hear that.
That is our hope. So I'm here to ask for to advertise for our public hearing. The Code of Virginia has that any additional appropriation which increases the total budget by more than 1% requires a public hearing. Notice that the public hearing has to be advertised at least once in the newspaper at least 7 days prior. We are planning on advertising both April 2nd and April 9th in the Flaviana Review. So are there any other questions?
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Gaffer. Hearing none, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors authorize staff to advertise for a public hearing on a FY20 budget amendment of 2.75 million from unassigned fund balance to the Zion Crossroads FY20 budget to be held on April 15th, 2020.
Second.
Got a motion made by Ms. Seeker and seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Mr. O'Brien absent. We'll now move forward with C, PSAP Vesta call system for 911. Ms. Tolbert.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, ma'am.
Okay, CAG, home handling equipment. This is the interface that allows public safety answering point to communicate with officers and 911 callers. This system is almost 7 years old. It needs to be replaced due to the age of the equipment and because we're going to the NG911, so all of our equipment is in need to be upgraded. If you remember, VITA has included most of this in the NG911 grant that we accepted in September 2018. You'll see here the actual equipment, the contract price is $159,639.06. They are covering $150,000 of that. So that leaves $9,639.06 to be covered by the county. They are also covering the text to 911, which the contract price is lower than the grant award, and the implementation, which again is coming in lower. We also have the maintenance cost. That's an annual cost. The overage, the $9,639, and the first year maintenance cost can be covered in the E911 budget this year. So we're not asking for additional funds. However, going forward in future budgets, we are going to have to add that maintenance cost in. It's not something that's accounted for in the budget. Even your next budget that you're working on now, it's not accounted for in that budget, so it will have to be added in. Any questions?
Can it be added in this budget? How's it working?
In the 2021.
So right now, in the 21 budget, mm-hmm. There things change. If you remember from the last meeting, we had some additional revenues and, we had some expenses lower. Well, this is one of those things that kind of just popped up a little bit. So we have a $6,100 that's added in there for the board. Well, to add in there for the board to consider, because it's going to be a contractual cost. And right. Michael Grandstaff is here, and he can answer any probably technical questions.
Yeah, if you have any specific questions about the system, he would be the one to answer those.
So we didn't have the additional $6,000 yearly.
Not going forward, right. No. It is able to be covered this year with not a problem in the current budget, so we don't have to adjust FY20.
Right.
But going forward, we will.
Okay.
Yeah, but and so like I said, as we start going into budget discussions, you'll see a $6,100 line that's added in the budget that we're working on. And just remember, we're authorizing the 196, but we've received $150,000 grant.
Correct.
Plus some other money from VITA to cover.
Right, and that part of the grant is a reimbursement. Part of the grant they are paying directly, but this part is a reimbursement.
And how long do you think that this system will provide the service that the police
Michael?
Need?
Mr. Grandstaff?
5 to 7 years.
5 to 7 years.
We can do it over again then, huh?
Hopefully there's not a grant.
I'm walking around with a cell iPhone 6 in my pocket. I think they're up to 11 now. That's okay. I've been behind a very long time. All righty, do we have any other questions? All right, do we have a motion?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve an agreement between the County of Susanna, Virginia and Central Link Communication LLC for PSAP Vista Call System costing $196,763.48 plus ongoing maintenance costs, and further authorize the County Administrator to execute the agreement subject to approval as to form by the County Attorney.
Second.
Motion made by Mrs. Booker and seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. Round begins after. Next comes D. FY20, Fork Union Engine 20, additional funding. Ms. Clisdale.
Good afternoon. We're back to talk about the FY20 fire truck for Fork Union. Originally, back in FY20 in the CIP, the board approved debt funding of $1,345,000 for four pieces of apparatus. The ambulance, $490,000, was moved to cash funding this year. The support 56 for $95,000 was also moved to cash funding by the board this year, which left us with $1,060,000 available for debt funding. Originally, that was going to be enough. We had a $600,000 fire truck, engine 20, and then we had a $460,000 tanker for Palmyra. Fork Union came to the Board of Supervisors on November 6th and said that $600,000 wasn't enough, and the board approved an additional $55,000 for the purchase of this vehicle. At that time, that night, the board discussed the fact that in the past, the fire trucks had been purchased but not equipped. And so the folks with the fire department went back and supplied us with a couple of equipment lists that totaled $113,079 to add to the price of this vehicle. So where we're at right now, the Palmyra tanker was originally appropriated at $460,000. We received the quote for $442,868, which included the equipment. Because of the timing, when you get quotes for fire trucks and this kind of thing, they expect you to buy it within 30, 60 days. Well, if you don't, there could always be an increase. So that increase we're anticipating would be about $12,924, bringing the total for the Palmyra tanker to $455,792, which is still under the appropriated amount. The original appropriation for the Fork Union engine was $600,000. We added the 55, which brought it up to 655. Now with the equipment, and again, the possible increase, depending on when we order it, that $600,000 truck is now up to $787,894. That's a lot. And an increase of what we would need as far as debt funding would be $128,686. We're asking for $130,000 increase in debt funding just in case there are any additional essentials that come up that we haven't accounted for. I have the list, and I have it printed out if this is too hard to read, but I have the list of equipment that the Fork Union department is asking for this engine. This list, I think, was pretty much, this hasn't been shopped as far as a quote, I don't believe. This is just their, you know, what they, I'm not sure how they came up with this number. I think they went online and looked at what the cost was. And then we had a quote for the second group of equipment that they need, which actually is a quote.
The second quote, I think that's for extrication equipment.
Yeah, and this is for the vehicle. I don't know a lot about fire trucks, so my question was, why can't you transfer equipment from the old fire truck to the new fire truck? But apparently, the old fire truck was never properly equipped. The chief from Fork Union and some of the additional fire people are here if you have any questions about that for them. But that's where we're at right now.
And we're kind of at the point now, so if you remember, the board approved debt to purchase these two trucks. But really, in order to take that debt out, we really kind of need what is the amount that is approved. One, we don't have the full budget authority to move forward to fully equip the truck, so we're coming back to the board to get authority, the budget authority, and then once we have what the amount is, then we can go out and do an RFP for debt financing for these two trucks.
And right now, as it stands, the amount of debt financing we would need, assuming this goes forward just like this is $1,245,000. We have approved $1,060,000, and then we added the 55, so that was $1,115,000. So we are looking at a $130,000 request for additional funding of Foley.
How much did it cost for due to the timing of placing the order? How much did that cost us?
It's approximately, it depends. This is an estimate. It's usually approximately about a 3% increase. Is the total that they've given us. We don't have the official that's on the
3%
of the cost.
Of what's that figure?
Well, for example, the appropriation for the Palmyra tanker at 460, if you take the equipment off of that, that would be 3% of that figure minus the equipment. So I think that was about $25,000 for 40.
25
for the equipment. Yeah, 25 for the equipment. So if you back the equipment out of the 460, then that order increase is going to be a percentage of whatever that leaves you there. It's about a 3% increase if you don't order it within 2 months of getting a quote.
No,
unfortunately, you can't do that because you have to go out and get debt funding, and that takes a while. If we were paying cash, it'd be different.
Now, the $600,000 was in the CIP.
The $600,000 was in the CIP, and then you added $55,000 on November 6th when they came back and said they couldn't buy a truck for $600,000.
Right.
So we have $655,000 set aside. Mm-hmm. But then that night, we discussed wanting to add the equipment to it so they could use the truck.
Yeah.
And the figures that they come back with now total $113,079 for the equipment that needs to go on the truck in addition to the truck.
Okay. And it originally, the fire station was going to do their own equipment.
That's historically
raising money, whatever.
Right.
And we talked about, why are we doing that? Why don't we just do everything at one time? So they really wasn't expecting that they would come up with $113,079
Well, equipment. I don't think we anticipated at all.
I heard $75,000
And that would, they can probably explain to you why the equipment costs
so much. Yeah, I know. Chief Ailey with Fork Union is here, and he can come up and he can talk about these equipment needs. You know, from the county standpoint, you know, and he can probably talk a little bit more in detail. You know, they're talking about maybe being able to pull some equipment off the old the old engine, but not all the equipment was able to be reused because it was just aged. And then there are some things that if the truck was even in service, they were going to have to kind of piecemeal it together throughout the next couple of years or so to be able to fully equip the truck. Well, if we're purchasing a truck, we should have the equipment that's needed to be able to do what is required when we have it.
Yeah, and I believe that they have, and he can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they have two trucks and they've been sharing the equipment from truck to truck. So I think the intention is to put all of the equipment off this truck onto the other truck to have that one fully equipped and then get a fully equipped new truck, I think is the plan.
Yeah, would you want to have Chief come up here and
just wait for the invite?
Yeah.
Okay, I see. A little history on this equipment list. I wasn't originally planning on asking for one. This equipment list was at the request of Mr. Dahl. He asked me, was the truck equipped? I said no. Over the years, they've been using it to 20 more as a spare truck. We're trying to have two fully equipped trucks so that we can better serve our area. I'm not sure why over the years the other engine wasn't re-equipped. I passed leadership some of the time since 21's been there. I was a member of another department. I don't know what the history is with past leadership and whether they just didn't have money or I just don't know. All I know is over the last year and a couple months I've been working very hard to do things very different. This equipment list is, other than the quote from Interstate Rescue for the extrication equipment, is not shopped at all. It was real quick, look it up on Google kind of thing, because Mr. Dahl needed the list really fast. So I anticipate that it not cost that much once it is shopped out in state contract and this vendor over this vendor kind of thing and
because what's going to happen, this list right here, we're going to have to go through purchasing and procurement to be able to purchase this stuff. It's not like we can just give, for this list, if you look at the bottom, it's $55,000. We can't just give $55,000 to Fork Union and then they just go purchase, you know, how they want. It's going to have to be shopped through purchasing and through procurement. So we need to kind of, and we're going to probably need more of a more detailed spec list showing, you know, what type of vendor or what type of equipment do we need. But in order for us to move forward, if we're equipping the trucks, we need to know how much we're coming to the board to equip the trucks with.
And as I pass that list around to two vendors and stuff, you know, it'll come back with name brands and item numbers and everything that Cindy needs to be able to do her job.
So the board can say, look, we want to fund this and this is the list and if when we get things back, if it's less, then that's it. Then we're not going to use it. Or the board can say, as they certainly can, you know, we don't want to fund $55,000, we only want to fund $50,000 I don't know, but that's like the decision is up to the board. But we had talked about if we have an apparatus, it would make sense to fund them so they can do the job when they're in the station. Now, I'm not a fire and rescue guy. I don't work on trucks all the time, so I can't tell you if this is a good list, a bad list, but he put effort to put the...
How that list came about is that is everything that's on our equipped engine minus the items that I already have. So that's how we came up with the list.
What would have happened if he hadn't asked you for that list? What would have happened right there at that
point? As Ms. Booker said a little while ago, over the next couple of years, we'd
be paying for
it. We're slowly buy the things.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the way they would buy them is we would give them operational dollars or some of our aid to locality.
A little bit of both, probably. But as we have it, you know, minus maintenance costs and whatever else we have yearly, but money from fundraising and whatnot, you know.
I think that what as I've been listening is that we're turning the corner on different way to finance our trucks. We're saying if you need, you buy the truck, you buy the equipment, you do everything at one time. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
Had there been an equipment list with Engine 21 when it was added to the system, we wouldn't even be sitting here right now.
Right.
It would have already been on.
Would it have been cheaper that way?
Same thing with probably back 10 years ago, because I mean, equipment goes up every year.
Well, but being on the equipment itself, would that make it cheaper rather than buying it later and buying it sort of in
bulk? Because most stuff would have transferred over if the truck was equipped right now.
Mm-hmm. But if you have a truck that wasn't equipped previously.
In the beginning, so he's caught with a truck that's not equipped to get, you know, it's not in a good way when you look at just money, but we're changing the way we do things. So, and somebody's going to be caught outside of the changes, and they're going to probably say, I wish I hadn't had that because now I'm doing so-and-so and all. So we're going to take some time before we're going to, all of the fire stations are on the same, some similar level.
Well, and maybe the board's going to get to a point where they say, well, look, maybe there is a set amount that we're going to say, you can spend this amount on this truck, and that amount should cover your equipment and your truck, and your the engine and stuff like that. And so then there's some decisions going forward, because if he came forward with a $2 million truck, I don't assume the board's going to fund a $2 million truck if that's what's being requested. So, but kind of going with this is kind of the methodology to go forward, is if we're going to purchase a truck, let's purchase it so it's incident ready when it hits the road.
So, Ms. L, you say these funds were volunteer funds before?
They had to come up buy their own equipment to equip the truck, to get a new truck.
It was
raising money is hard today.
And so now we're switching over to the county's picking up the difference.
One of the things I will tell you is different is the amount of time required to train stuff like that. Back in the early days, you had more time to fundraise because you weren't
trained.
You weren't required to do as much other stuff.
I'm putting in 60 plus hours a week right now.
Volunteer.
Just in fire department stuff. Mm-hmm. Like for instance, and that you will, there were, there's, you don't, there's not always a big equipment need for every truck either. Right now on the budget we're working on for fiscal year 21, unless it gets pushed off, our rush truck is up for replacement. Well, if it goes through, I have everything I need for that truck. There won't be an equipment list with that truck. It's just we're caught with a couple vehicles because we added two engines to each house. I think Kent Storrs faced some of the same issues too, is we added engines, but we didn't add an equipment list, and maybe the money wasn't there. Like I said, for some of it, I wasn't there for, so I can't really speak on the history since the second engine has been in the building, but.
Ken Storch truck.
Does each firehouse have two engines?
Yes, ma'am.
They do now, yes.
They do now.
Right, and how old is this truck that you're replacing?
It's a 1993.
Okay.
It was ordered in 92, I believe.
It's old.
It's really old and it's falling apart. We're patching it together as we can to keep it going out right now.
So when they purchase this new apparatus, remember too, and there'll be some reimbursement coming back to the county, because when the apparatus gets sold, the county will sell the apparatus and those funds will come back to the county.
Oh, you mean that they'll sell the 1992 fire truck?
Yes.
You'll have contractors sometimes that come in there that need to haul water somewhere. I know we sold one of our old tanker engine, I can't believe it, remember which one, to A.G. Dillard just because they needed to haul 1,500 gallons of water.
Where's that money go to then?
Well, at that time, it went back.
It went back to us because we were equipping the vehicle. Yeah. But if we start equipping the vehicle as a county, then the money will come back to us.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. And the tanker for Palmyra, how old is that truck?
We can have
Chief Mayo.
We can
yes.
Chief One. Excuse me.
Yeah. That truck is a
old.
That's a good question. 99.
Well,
I think it's somewhere around there. Yeah, I think that's good.
I think you may be right that we may end up one day looking at a settlement.
Mm-hmm. And that's
and not just saying that. if you want to get a high dollar truck, then that's fine. You're just gonna have to help raise the money to pay for that. If you want an excessive truck, then you have to help pay for it. But
well, and like I said, you know, if you go through time and you're not, and you have trucks that, let's say hypothetically, they have an incident now in the Fork Union area. Well, technically, if you don't have two trucks that could go out and do the same thing, it's kind of, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. You have to wait for a truck from another area.
We're in the first, if you have a structure fire in Fork Union and Kent Store, we're going to take our tanker, we're going to take our first engine, and we're going to Fork Union. Now, say, hope this never happens, but say we have a structure fire in Kent Store. That was the thought process behind putting two engines in each building. That we still have an engine in case we have a fire in Kent Store that we can get out if we got enough volunteers.
There are been times over the last year we've had both of our engines out at one time, two different directions for whatever it might have been, but.
Brush fire
there anything. Yeah, anything. I mean, you know, we might have one out the lake for somebody smells propane and one to go down towards another direction in our area, you know. And sometimes it happens.
It doesn't happen very often, thank God, and we don't want it to happen. But if it does happen, that was the thought process behind having two engines, I believe. Y'all guys have been around it longer than I have, well, maybe not, but y'all have colored hats.
Every situation is different.
Look, I understand this equipment's expensive and none of the apparatus is getting any cheaper. And, you know, can we do it a different way? Maybe we can, but at this point we need to get all of the equipment up to a level that it can respond the same on any incident. And until that point, you know, we're piecemealing things together. And like I said, all the fire companies, they get money from aid to locality money, and they can equip, you know, some extra stuff. So it's like the dollar amount's up to the board.
Where's the aid?
Comes from the state. The state gives the county aid to locality money. We get probably $80,000 a year, $90,000 a year, and then that money is divvied up, I think, in, you know, equal portions to the four fire companies, Palmyra, Kent Store, Fork Union, and Lake Monticello. And then they can use those funds very specific to, there's guidelines what they can use the aid to locality, state fire fund money for.
Okay.
But it's generally equipment and stuff like that.
But it's usually about $20,000 station.
Yeah, that they get a year.
So it's not going to cover.
Yeah.
And how many firemen are at the station at a time? Do you have enough men or women to work two trucks at a time?
Most of the time, yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it fluctuates for all of us, you know, our manpower at times.
Like we talked about with the
rescue.
With the rescue. When we have daytime fire calls, knock on wood, Mr. Winkler and Dr. Tenya are very good to me. That if we have a fire call that I think I need to be in, they allow me to go. Because there's been times when Chief Brent, his brother Dennis, and Frankie and I might be the only people there for, I'm going back 10 years. We might be the only people there for the first 15 minutes while we're waiting for other people to get from work. And that's when I would jump out my car and run over there, and Chief Brent would have his gear laid beside his truck, and I just throw him his gear. I got to act like Chief Warren. Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions? Do we have a motion?
I want to do this motion, but I got a pretzel in my mouth.
Hey, take your time, buddy.
That happens to us every once in a while, Ms. Booker.
Okay. Patience. Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve a supplemental appropriation of $130,000 to the CIP budget for fire rescue vehicle apparatus to add additional debt funding for Falk Union Engine 20 to the previously approved debt funding of $655,000.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I voted against this last time because I thought it was too much, and I'm going to do it again, but if motion passes, 3-1. Now we have appointments. E, board committee and commission appointments. Caitlin, Ms. Solis.
I'll take the rain from Ms.
You got the rain from Ms. Solis? Yeah, she's probably going, thank you, Lord.
So we just really have one committee member for the 14th Sanitary District. We're going through and trying to fill those empty spots.
You're trying to find
yep. We met with FUMA recently, Chief of Staff Masick for the 14th Military Academy. He's been appointed by the president there to be the 14th Military Academy representative.
Anyway, just like it.
Yep.
Said, yes, right. Sir.
He did.
Yeah.
So we just need the board to read the motion there, and then the committee and the appointee in the beginning and end term.
Okay. I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following board, commission, or committee appointment for Falk Union Center District Attorney. Advisory Attorney Committee. Advisory Committee, FUMA, Representative Stephen M.
Mason.
March 4th, 2020 to December the 31st, 2021.
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Booker and seconded by Ms. Seeger. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 4-0. 8. Presentation. Pearson Appraisal Property Valuation Methods. Mr. Randy Willis.
Good afternoon, all.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much for coming out today.
No problem.
And then before Mr. Willis gets started, each of you have a little two-page kind of handout here that Mr. Willis provided, just kind of talking about general procedures involved in the general reassessment and what they do for residential commercial properties and then what they look at for vacant undeveloped land. And then I'll let him kind of take the reins from here. And I know some of the board members may have some questions, and then we'll let Mr. Willis take it from there.
Again, good afternoon. This is just a general overview of what goes into producing the assessments. We do a very thorough market study, and it's detailed what we look at in these market studies. We review each sale that's a qualified sale. we analyzed the characteristics thoroughly. And two, it's based on location. But we build valuation rates based on the market data that we put into the CAMA system to generate these values. And we know, as we discussed the last reassessment, we know the difference in the county as far as the areas that are hot and what is not. So we do take that in consideration. We do not apply a blanket assessment to every parcel in the county. We look at location. The values we put in place are not based on speculation. They would be based on market data. Speculation is not supported if I'm talking to you about your property value. It's not supported if I'm in court talking about property valuation. So it's all based on market data. As far as our progress, we have reviewed or physically visited 9,050 parcels out of the 16,400 to date. We are capturing images of all approved parcels that are accessible, and we haven't been shot at yet. Knock on wood.
Haven't been discussed. I was gonna say Ken Stoller.
We're also leaving door hangers, and we have had a lot of door hangers mailed back in to us, which is unusual. A lot of people usually take them from the trash. But we've had a lot of response from the door hangers, which is good. It helps us to verify the information on the records. And I'm here just to address any kind of questions you all may have.
Did you get an email back?
I did not. Okay. You know,
I know one of the biggest questions that one of our Mr. Earl Bryan, he had to be out, he's coming in later, but he just couldn't make it back, was the water line that we're putting into Zions Crossroads. It's right. Not completed yet, right. But it will be completed before the end of this year. Mm-hmm. Hopefully by good Lord willing, the creeks don't rise too much.
I've been keeping my eye on that too.
So that is one question. Do y'all take that into account? Because these are for January 1 of next year, correct?
We're going to study the sales before we make any projections with the 2021 assessments. We're going to study the market or sales through the third quarter, roughly.
Okay, so that will allow the line to be done.
Yes.
That will allow the line to be done.
Yes.
So that's one of the big questions I know that he had, because that will have an effect on...
And it's going to be all about what type of sales activity occurs.
Sure.
Now,
does rezonings, does that have any play? I mean, like, let's say a lot of lands up there is currently zoned A1, and say within the next 2 to 3 months, you know, you get a lot more parcels that are swapping over to business or industrial.
It can, and we would still look at the highest and best use.
So if it's business, it's going to be...
Even if it's agricultural
and
today...
And it's used as business, then.
Even if it's agricultural today, but it's highest and best use, definitely would be commercial development, we would consider that.
Okay, I know that's one of the questions Mr. O'Brien had.
But again, it's going to depend mainly on sales activity.
Sure.
Do you check the real estate magazines where they advertise homes for sale?
We get MLS, yes, okay. Multiple listing service.
Yeah, a friend of mine is an appraiser, mm-hmm. And he said that's the best way to know how many bathrooms there really are in the house.
True, and that's what we have access to multiple listing service, mm-hmm. And when we review and analyze the sales, we look at the characteristics and compare
right.
For each house.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Because we don't get inside of houses, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And quite often, the MLS will have some good pictures inside of the house,
yes.
Too. And that helps a lot,
yeah.
Especially for an older house that's been renovated,
mm-hmm.
and possibly not permitted, mm-hmm. When it was renovated. That does occur.
Can y'all think of any other questions?
And Mel knows, and as well as Mr. Dahl, if you ever have a property owner that has a question, I'll be glad to speak with them or meet with them.
And if the board ever has questions, either, you know, Mr. Willis said he'd be happy to, you know, talk to anybody.
Where's your number?
I can get it.
Mel's back there, not in the day going, I'm trying to get.
And what was your name again? What was your name again?
Randy Willis.
Randy, okay, Randy.
And another thing in doing these property assessments, we're not always perfect, but we try to be uniform in the application based on the characteristics to create equal taxation.
And if things come up, and Mel could probably speak about this, that's where the Board of Equalization comes into play after the reassessment's done.
Yeah, so we hold informal appeals after we mail out notices as well.
Oh, so y'all do it as well. So they've got two chances to catch you.
Yes. And, you know, we'll do it by phone call. We can do it by email correspondence. We can sit face-to-face. And if you've got someone that you know physically can't make it here, I'll go see them.
Okay. Well, thanks.
If they have a question, they need a chance to
be heard.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And the last time you did this, you're not going to be able to answer this question. I don't even know why. I won't bumble it when I say it.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about a blanket overlay. It wasn't a blanket overlay. I think the area of the county that the appraisals rate rose the most, I believe it was the northeast corner, or one of them.
Northeast, northwest.
Northeast and northwest.
Northeast did go up in certain, say, north of Venable Road.
Oh, yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
Kent Store.
17%. Yes, yes, sir.
and you know, we'll study the market.
That one hit hard.
We'll study the market. The market's been pretty active. It was active the last reassessment cycle.
The market's really been it's hit going well here lately.
But you know, at the same time, I remember 2008 real well, mm-hmm. when the market tanked.
Right, yeah.
So, you know, we have to really study the market data thoroughly through as long as we can in 2020.
So you're going through September with sales and everything else at least?
Probably through August, because we'll have to mail notices around then.
Because the only reason I say that is, what's our projected?
The water line, did you come with water line?
Yes, sir.
It's going to be done. The final completion is not until actually about November of 2019.
Okay. 2020. So November of 2020. So that's the only reason. That's the only thing, and I know we had a question about is if that's done by the beginning of the year and all of a sudden, you know what I'm saying.
I do.
Because that's going to make land values, and I'm not trying to hit anybody hard, but we want to make sure that everything is fair and equitable.
Right. And we do too.
I appreciate it. All right. Any other questions for anyone? Thank you so very much for coming out.
It was good to see all of you.
You too. I remember you speaking to us before.
Yes, sir. And if any questions in the future, let me know.
We will. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure will. Thank you.
Thank y'all.
All right. Consent agenda. G, minutes of February 12, 2020, Ms. Solis. H, minutes of February 19, 2020, Ms. Solis. I, resolution recognizing Jeremy Armentrout, Eagle Scout. J, A.G. Dillard, change order number 3, Ms. Toller. K, PA number 1, Amendment 5, Zions Cross Road easement revision, Ms. Toller. L, approval of Mr. John A. Vaughn as the acting building official for Fluvanna County, Mr. Miles. And M, temporary staff stipend for additional duties, Mr. Vaughn, Ms. Rice. Is there anything that we want to pull?
We need the votes on that.
That's right. We didn't do a resolution for that. We did the resolution for Mr. Armentrout.
Okay, so on the agenda title, it has for Ben Crystal.
That's
okay.
No, we've actually had Mr. Seal, who you just went to.
Yes.
Mr. Armentrout, he actually got his before Mr. Seal, but we never recognized him.
Right. Oh, okay.
Nobody let us know about that, so we're trying to go back and catch up. We'll make sure we get him something.
Okay. Okay, right. So that he's already been given his...
Yes. He's already received his Eagle Scout award. Yes.
So we're just going to give him the...
Yes. So we just need to have a vote on this. Mm-hmm. Do we have a motion to... go back to the top. What is it? Go back for a resolution for Mr. Jeremy Armentrout to receive his Eagle Scout Award.
I move the Flavanna County Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution entitled Recognizing Jeremy Armentrout for Award of Eagle Scout Status.
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Eager, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes. Thank you. I forgot all about that one, Mr. Weaver. Okay. Is there anything else we want to pull?
No. But,
all righty. Do we have a motion?
Sure do. I move that we approve the consent agenda from G through M.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion's made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. The motion passes 4-0. Is any unfinished business? Is there any new business? Okay. I will now open the second round of public comment. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the witness chair, state your name, address, keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic, and direct it to the board. Is anyone wishing to speak at this time? I don't think he's coming up. I think he's arresting Mr. Dahl. I'm sorry. Could you say that again? I made a joke. Everybody, I'm sorry.
Patty, you guys should
have spread it out. Yes, ma'am, Ms. Ramos.
Okay. So, just talking about, I have a iPhone 5S, so I'm a little behind too. But yeah, spending, I feel like, you know what, we really need to try to find options and ways to reduce spending, because there's so much request coming, you know, for additional nonprofit funding. You know, the sheriff's department needs more money, the school's asking for more money. There's a lot of, you know, people asking for a lot of money. And just an example, like the fire department, you know, asking for additional funding to equip their trucks. So, you know, that all brings everything back to taxes, because this county is run on taxpayers' dollars. I mean, it's no different for other counties, but, you know, it's a big deal, because, you know, I keep coming back to that about $4.5 million, but that's a lot of money that we could be using to offset some of these other costs. You know, I just would ask the board, you know, to go out and look at some of these examples that I keep bringing up, because, you know, when we want to talk about the rollback, somebody says, well, somebody had property and rollback tax is going to apply when they sell it for 5 years, but that's actually not true if the buyer keeps it in land use. So that buyer that buys that property, and I'll just use the same example that I used last time, for that $950,000, if that property stays in land use, there's no rollback tax. So that property could only have to stay in land use for 1 year. And then if the person who purchased it decides they're going to develop it, they would just pay that tax for 1 year. So
it has to go back 5 years.
So the purchaser, if they had it in land use and kept it in land use for that 1 year, I mean.
Generally, what happens is the previous owner would be responsible for the 4 years prior to that. The county would get 5 years. Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Don't want to use your time.
That's okay. Because, you know, actually, I did call our commissioner's office, but I didn't get a call back. So I was trying to get that answer specifically. I'm glad to know that. But, you know, I know that, like I said, there's a lot of money that is left on the table that is not being collected as a result of land use. I understand the assessment process. Totally, but what I don't understand, and I know that this is, like I said, this is something that the county board of supervisors has the authority to make this decision on, you know, moving forward with continuing to have land use. Like I said, our neighboring county, Buckingham, they don't have it. Everybody pays, you know, the same taxes. There's no reduction for anything. And I'm just saying, yeah, I get that, you know what, 2 acres in your house is going to be assessed and you're going to pay that taxes. But then if you have another 200 acres, I mean, you're talking about, you know, thousands of dollars that is not being collected as a result. Now, I mean, nobody likes taxes.
you know. But for the people that are getting, you know, thousands of dollars a break on not paying, well, I know that these people are going to be a lot happier. I would be too. But, you know, I have some additional property that I could potentially put into land use, and I've chosen not to do that because that would make me a hypocrite. And I you know, feel that, you know, what we all should be playing by the same rules. And that's all I'm asking is for you guys to just look, you know, at, I mean, it's hundreds of acres of property that we're talking about. So that's just, you know, like I said, and if you're looking at the communities that have been developed, in those communities, in addition to the taxes, there's homeowners associations, there's additional fees, which really is just another tax that these people have to bear. So, you know, when you start adding all those numbers up, that's a lot of money. So I'm just saying, if you would just go look at these examples and the total acres, and I've said it before, when you have 183,000 acres total in the county, over 110,000 of that acreage is in some sort of land use that does not include our property that is owned by the county, our schools, you know, our buildings, county administration buildings, our courthouse, what have you, our Pleasant Grove. I mean, if you add all these in, plus, you know, the properties that are not being taxed for other reasons, we have a tremendous amount of our property is in land use.
Thank you, ma'am. Is anyone else wishing to speak at this time? Public comment. Seeing no one, I will now close. Second round of public comment. And Mr. Weaver.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-37118.3 Real Estate, Section 2.2-37118.6 Investment of Funds, Section 2.2-37118.6 Legal Matters, Section 2.2-37118.19 Public Safety of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing real estate, investment of funds, legal matters, and public safety.
Second.
Motion has been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session.
So, Mr. Weaver.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, any public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 2.2-3711-8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was convened were heard, discussed, and considered in the meeting.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Motion has been made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Mr. Weaver?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So made. Right.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
You may hear from the last.
Okay. You
can
vote.
What are we adjourning for?
We're adjourning the meeting so we can start the work session.
We usually just go right into the work session.
All right. We're going to adjourn the meeting, and then we'll start the work session.
Okay.
All righty. Those opposed, chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. I call the work session for Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God,
indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you very much. All right.
I feel cool air coming in here.
Yeah, it's cold, isn't it?
It's cold. Yeah, I can feel it over here.
It's hot.
Okay. I'm all right, but I'm just saying I can feel cold air coming in.
It's hot in here.
This work session is going to cover the budget.
There you go.
Okay. Minimize. Okay. There we go. Okay, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Okay, so I think we're ready here. So what we have planned for this evening is one, to kind of look at a few of the county department budgets. You know, we're going to just kind of briefly go over those. Namely, the largest ones would be some of the budgets that fall under Public Works, Facilities, and then Parks and Rec. Then after that, we can look into CIP to see what the board wants to do. Ms. Rice also has a couple slide presentations to go over a little more detail of the health insurance and kind of where we ended up from the last meeting, as well as some different pay options. I know, we talked about some different targeted raises and some different salary increases related to the sheriff's office. And since last week, too, we've had some changes in some of the revenues and some things that we originally came up with. So why don't we go ahead and start, Liz, go to page, go to the first tab, please. Go down to Public Works, please. So really, when you get down to the Public Works section, close that out. So really the only two departments that really had a big change was really either facilities budget for what was requested. Mr. Hickman requested 1.18 million and I funded 1,077,000, and his budget is still significantly more than last year, and it was just due to the fact of, are all these projects that are envisioned in his budget, are we going to be able to get those done this year? And I'll let Mr. Hickman talk about those. So go into facilities really quick. Scroll down to contract services. Go back up.
Not used to your mouse.
That's all right. Stop right there. Okay, so really when you think about a lot of the lines that this budget works with, contract services and buildings, equipment, repair, and maintenance, those two dollar amounts kind of go hand in hand in a lot of things. Some of it is buying materials to do the work, and some of it is really just hiring out contractually, and sometimes things maybe didn't get put in the right place. But really, those are the dollar amounts moving forward. Those are the cumulative amounts. So we requested $131,000, and I funded $131,000. It was basically under the contractual service amount. For the current fiscal year, there was $40,000 budgeted. He requested $180,000, and I met in the middle for $105,000. And it just kind of falls into those particular categories of electrical services, plumbing services, paint services, carpentry, roofing, tree trimming, etc. And so, Calvin, you want to talk about, on some of those, on what's the need and not having that dollar in budget, how that's going to affect what you do?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Dahl. We manage 43 buildings, 129,000 square feet. It takes a lot of money to maintain old buildings. We don't have all the skill level in-house to fix everything that gets broken, so we have to contract out. There's three things we can do: fix it in-house, subcontractors don't do it. So if the money's not there, we don't do it. But it just takes a lot of money. Nothing gets any cheaper any year to maintain any buildings. Labor goes up, material goes up. That, what I've requested, isn't enough to do all that we want to do, just to maintain as is. And I requested 180, but you can see where Mr. Dahl budgeted.
And if you look at his actuals, you know, year by year, and I tried to go up from where his 19 actuals were without completely going up by one, you know, which is almost probably by, you know, a half a cent almost, but I tried to make it a reasonable increase. And some of this too could come into play with the capital reserve maintenance fund, which we fund as well. So that's really, for the facilities budget, that's really the biggest area of change there. Does the board have any questions on that or any thoughts?
For the right-hand column with all the services listed, that yes. rolls up to 180,000.
It does.
Does it go further down?
No, I like from
No, that's it.
Yeah.
You highlight from the
it's
15.
Not way sensitive. Nope. 15, up 5.
Oh, sorry.
That's the 180,000 right there.
So if you don't get this, where would you cut? I mean, where would we go with that?
Mr. Hickman answer.
First come, first serve. As we go through the budget, you know, what comes up first? We don't know what can always come up during the year, but we know what it costs to maintain a building the way it should be. You would just prioritize, I would think. All the work would not get done.
So the big number there is roofing and painting. So I guess the question is, are any of the current roofs in such bad condition that they won't last another year?
I wouldn't look at it in a year. I would look at it, I just wouldn't look at it per year. Some of the things, we have slate roofs. One of the most expensive roofs to fix is a slate roof. We have metal roofs. It's just not all asphalt roofs. It's just expensive. I mean, you could have one roofing job and it's $20,000.
Sure.
It could be $50,000.
And that's a little bit where, you know, some of this kind of falls into day-to-day stuff. If we're getting to the $20,000 mark, I think that's where the capital reserve maintenance fund really would kind of come into play with some of this.
Addressing cover that's 65 or whatever it was.
Addressing some of the items that are not necessarily CIP items, but are not necessarily, you know, the $5,000.
$50,000.
Yeah. But again, you know, are we going to be able to do everything? Let me ask you this. Are all these earmarked to one particular project in general, or is it more so, you know what, this is the need I foresee for the next fiscal year?
This is the need I see for the next fiscal year. It's an overall picture.
Yeah.
After looking at all the buildings.
So that's really the biggest change on there. And then if you look, like I said, as I said before, if you combine those lines, that's about 280. That's about, you know, about 300,000. That's about, you know, 300,000. Fiscal year 20 was only budgeted at 170, you know, roughly about 176,000. And I funded, you know, right around 310. So I've been trying to fund kind of what was in line with what was previously there for the combining those two lines together.
Mm-hmm. Where's the savings on the maintenance and all that we hired one person to do in-house on all the staff?
The HVAC stuff.
Yeah, that's going to be under the HVAC stuff. I mean,
So you have about 100,000 savings in that, don't you?
Well, yeah, I mean, but really in this one, that would come up. Does that come under facilities? Yes. That normally would come under here. It's a combination of two budgets. It's general services because we had a contract. Then we pay general services. We had the contract. Yes. Mm-hmm. It's under the general services budget that we had an annual contract. So that amount is gone. But then you'd also have fixes that would come out of this one. Like the onesie-twosie fixes, not the ongoing maintenance contracts.
Well, and this is more equipment, not labor, whereas before you had labor in there, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see in here, there's no HVAC in there in under contracted services because we have an in-house person.
It's under building equipment, repair, and maintenance.
Well, yeah, that's the buy the equipment. Mm-hmm. If we needed to purchase something, if you see right there, we have HVAC system repairs, $45,000. That would be for the county to purchase the equipment to then have our on-staff person repair it. So go ahead and close this out, Liz. That's really the biggest change in there. Let me see here. Just go to general services really quick. General services is basically a flat budget as well. Go up. Is that it right there?
That's it. If you look at the third one down, you can see where you zeroed out HVAC.
Yeah. So again, this kind of goes back to some things too. We added some additional some public safety equipment to us, to this line. And so we had some additional costs that hit there, but then the HVAC system, the preventative maintenance was zeroed out there. Again, this was basically a little bit higher of a budget than it was last fiscal year, just because there's lots of equipment that the county has to maintain and fix.
The $3,100 for first aid kits.
Yep.
What does that mean?
That's for each of the buildings that we have a medical kit that is serviced by CentOS, and that's the cost per year to service. I don't know how many there are, Dale. There's at least a dozen.
We have three.
They're all over lots of buildings. And they go out and replenish things, periodically on a monthly basis.
Yeah,
quarterly. Band-aids?
Band-aids, aspirin, any first aid stuff.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yes, anything first aid related.
Do you have defibrillators and stuff like that?
No, we don't. We don't. We had talked about defibrillators and then even possibly doing them for certain buildings.
The AEDs.
Yeah, the AEDs. To do them, I think to purchase them, we had one time looked at them, and I want to say it was around... $6,000 to $10,000 a unit to purchase, and then you gotta maintain the units. And then one thing we were to look at just to see what it would be to maybe lease a unit. And I don't know, maybe the fire and rescue folks could speak on.
Cindy and I just met with the CentOS and got a quote on we can get one with leasing them, not purchasing them, but we can get them for $99 each month leasing, and CentOS would come in and do all the maintenance on it.
So,
and we're going to bring that to you. We do have that option.
Yeah. Well, what's the life on an AED?
15 years. They say that they
how many? 15 years normally.
Oh yeah, they were saying replace them every like six because of the technology. So this lease would be for so many years, and then like a new one would come in to replace
this
it.
Time
so
to figure out if we did it
right.
For 6 months. $1,200 a year. Batteries there.
Well, depending on where.
That's just for one. It's not in the budget now.
It is not in the budget right now.
Okay.
It is not in the budget right now. So general services overall had a slight increase just because we're this is Calvin's. He's been on board now for a year, and he's had a chance to look into all of our systems a lot better and see what needs to happen to upkeep what we currently have in the county. So go ahead and close that out, Liz. The convenience center, we talked about the convenience center. I don't think we really need to talk about that one anymore. We're having a big increase. We did add the additional revenue that the board just approved recently, so that one is not a big change. Really, out of that section, out of those budgets that Mr. Hickman oversees, those are really the two biggest changes. So unless the board has any questions about public works, I can have just Mr. Spitzer come up and just kind of talk about a little bit what he requested, what was funded, and then we can kind of go from there. And we can have Ms. Rice talk about health insurance and some of the pay stuff. Aaron, why don't you come up real quick? Go down to public Parks and Rec, please. So he requested $675,000, and my proposed budget is $608,000, and a lot of it basically comes down to go down to the very bottom.
Right there.
basically comes out to site improvements. Mm-hmm. If you see, he was requesting $84,850. I funded $17,850. The biggest one, again, was the Pleasant Grove soccer field fencing for $49,000. And there's a few other small items in there, too. That's the biggest item, and you want to talk about what you won't be able to do if I don't fund this, or if the board doesn't fund?
I mean, we just won't be able to keep our soccer fields from animals tearing them up and people golfing on them and stuff like that that currently happens. We just won't be able to put a fence up. I mean, you know what I'm saying? It'll be kind of like they are, and get holes in them and you fix them.
What's the labor cost on repairs? I mean, how much time are we spending repairing the field?
We put in a work order to Public Works, and they take care of it currently. So I can't track that for you. That's the way we are currently set up to do it. Every now and then, I'll get a bucket of dirt and fill it in and put some grass seed on it, because I'm out there and I know it happens. But
one thing in the
bigger, bigger things.
And just remember, in this budget too, I included a second part-time parks maintenance person to start maintaining all of the parks for Mr. Spitzer, and then that'll alleviate some pressure on the Public Works grounds crews to then start doing things that they weren't doing before. For instance, you had a bunch of utility buildings, you had folks that were mowing the grass around utility buildings, so it's just trying to transition what folks are focusing on.
Can we start tracking the cost, because Mr. Spitzer's advocated for this fence for a number of years now, right?
Yep.
If we were actually able to start tracking the cost.
You know, what it costs.
If we're spending $3,000 a year on personnel, or $4,000 or whatever the number might be, then all of a sudden it may make a lot more sense to say, yeah, it's good.
A lot of it would be the sprinkler heads we fix. I think those are $100, $200 a pop, almost.
Sure, but then you also have labor behind it.
Behind that, he has to come in and do it. Right. So
we drive down.
Or if you get some.
I mean, we catch kids when they come up, and it's a spray pad for them. No joke. They're sitting there right under the sprinkler, jumping on them, messing with them, and yell at them, please don't do that. And that's all you can really do. It's the only way to keep them off.
Fence will keep them off.
You can shut the gate so it's only open certain times, or you can go talk to them, but you can actually have signage and. It's a barrier. It'll help. Because they're not going to be able to go right from the playground right over to the little sprinkler they see going off. They'll have to go around, find the gate, get in. It's a little deterrent for everybody.
Kids don't have any problem with that.
Some don't. Deer would.
I wasn't going to be down
dogs, deer.
If you're talking about deer, we can't build a fence high enough.
No, dogs, I mean.
Because I can tell you, on our baseball field, it's in manure out there all the time.
It is what it means.
Barbed wire, chains on top.
So again, the $50,000, that's basically the biggest change in Mr. Spitzer's budget. I just didn't really fund some of that, and there's maybe a few other items in there.
Yeah, that's one. And then the gate, I think, is not funded.
Yeah.
The gate, that was the other thing.
Where did you want a gate?
At the front of the park to try to keep people out.
Up there, roundabout.
Just past the entrance sign, where the brick sign is.
Oh, to be able to shut it off in the evening.
Be able to go straight across. The sheriff's department's offered to shut it off and open it up for us.
Our only concern with some of that is you have some that would be very determined to get.
You could go around the gate.
You could just drive right around the grass and go right through.
Once again, I've been there at graduation and they're cutting out down there at the bottom. I've seen a bunch of minivans get stuck trying to jump that ditch.
You can, but it may deter somebody from going back there in the middle of the night drinking or doing whatever they do.
I think until you get posts, if you wanted to do completely make it, you'd have to put posts up around the whole front of the park.
And this is kind of a request away from the sheriff to try to do this, so it's not just my request to put the gate out there.
The gate was 8,000.
One for each.
Yep.
Where don't the dog park too? Because they drive down to Sandy Beach and build fires and everything else down there. So we're trying to keep them out.
So, does the board have any questions on the Parks and Rec budget? All right, so Liz, close that out.
Thank you.
Let's go down to the CIP really quick.
I'll make that a little smaller so.
Um,
So under Parks and Rec, so what he requested, the playground expansion for $90,000. I funded $45,000 of it out of fund balance and $45,000 of it out of a grant. The one thing that we have looked into that I think that we can do if the board doesn't want to fund this out of fund balance, we've got some proper money that's still been sitting there that can be used for some athletic and some park upgrades that are, you know, serve a community purpose. Instead of dipping into fund balance, we could possibly use the proper money to do that, which would then, you know, alleviate some of the fund balance use for that. And then this way, it's trying to, you know, help to, you know, increase some additional amenities at the parks. You know, Mr. Spitzer's Parks and Rec CIPs haven't been that successful for the past couple fiscal years. But anyway, he asked for that, and he asked for a spray ground park, which was $180,000, and I didn't put that in my budget. Go down to Public Works. And let me back up into this. So I'm backing into a fund balance number that I have to work with based upon what we're funding for the Zion's Crossroads project and what we've got coming down the line for some James River Water Authority and some potential other uses this year. So I had to go through and take a look at what we can fund out of that particular number. When you get to Public Works, as always, we have the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund for $200,000. That's funded out of the tax rate. It was actually $250,000. I funded $200,000, and the only reason currently, if I remember correctly, I think there's about $300,000 in the Capital Reserve Maintenance Fund as it stands. So we had a decent balance sitting there. And then I did the same thing for both county and schools.
Yeah, they're both a little over $300,000.
What's that?
They're both a little over $300,000.
Historic courthouse exterior renovation. There was an additional, So he asked it for an additional $250,000 to do the historic courthouse renovation. There's currently a little over $200,000 sitting in there. 218, to do that. And like I said, what I tried to do, I tried to fund the items that he had as number. As I went through each department or function, I tried to fund a little bit of everything that had number ones next to them. So again, you know, the historic courthouse renovation was a number two. I didn't fund that, but under equipment purchase and replacement plan, that's for funding and replacing. I think there's a front loader and some other equipment, and we can go in and take a look at that. Pavement administration and public safety building paving. Again, I didn't fund that. HVAC upgrade for social services. I did not fund that, and that's not a required one at this point, but that's something that's coming down the line, correct?
That's right.
Yes. Another number one was a Carriage Brook equipment storage shed. You know, we talked about this before. You know, we've got lots of equipment and it's sitting out in the elements, and it just it ages our equipment a lot faster. So $74,000 was requested for a equipment storage shed down at Carriesbrook. There was a restroom upgrade at the dog park that was not funded for $55,000. One thing I did put in here for the out years, just so the board knows. So the big space study presentation for the new admin building, social services building at Pleasant Grove Park, and then renovating this building, renovating social services building, and then we would get rid of some of the existing county buildings. I put that in the next fiscal year for 22 to include some of the design work in there for $640,000, and then every year thereafter, I've got a phase of the admin building in the following year, then a phase of the social services building the year after that. It's for a discussion for the board as we come to the next fiscal year, but that's there. There was a request for county vehicles for $220,000. I mean, again, we just trying to fund what we could and get with Mr. Hickman for what is a priority. So we funded $25,000 under county vehicles, going under public safety.
Sheriff requested a secure Sally port. That was the number one that I funded that. Sheriff's vehicles, he requested $218,000. I didn't fund the whole amount, and there was a little bit of a carryover too in some additional sheriff's vehicles for the current fiscal year. Going to down to fire and rescue, and sheriff can speak on the vehicles if you don't get what I funded in there, what's that going to do for you or not do for you?
It'll just put us behind next year.
Yeah.
I mean, we pretty much got them in a cycle now, and things have been working well with trying to keep it. And then like I've told you in the past, when we don't need something, we leave the money in there.
Yeah.
But we have to have it. It's better. There was a little left over last year. We've got pretty much when we ask what we need. That's what we need for next year.
So again, I'm falling back into what we have for fund balance to move forward, unless the board wanted to take some different approach to debt fund something that frees up a lot of the fund balance. That's really the only way that we could fund a lot more of these CIP projects. Going down to fire and rescue vehicle apparatus, they requested $635,000 for some. Go to that vehicle apparatus, please, Liz. Go to page 2. And blow it up a little bit.
So I can't see. Can't read any of that.
So one bigger.
It is tiny writing.
One bigger, there we go. So they requested $185,000 for Fork Union Attack 20. $96,000 for Lake Monticello Response 5, Chief 1 for $64,000, and replacement of an ambulance at Lake Monticello for $290,000. The only thing I included in there was the $64,000 for Chief 1, and I can let the fire and rescue folks can advocate for what they need or what that's going to do. Obviously, like all departments, if we don't get the vehicles we need in this fiscal year, it is gonna push it back. But I'm not in those agencies to know what the actual need is, and we don't have the fund balance to fund them as we need, unless the board says let's take out debt proceeds to do that. Chief Ailey, you want to talk about Attack 20?
Attack 20 is a somewhere in 98 or 99,
2001
truck. It's the truck part of it, the driving truck part of it it's on F-550 chassis. That's still in pretty good shape. The fire truck part of it is starting to get some wear on it, starting to nickel and dime a little bit.
How many miles is on it?
The actual truck has only got
we don't put that.
26,000 somewhere in there, roughly, give or take a little bit. This is off. It's less than 30.
So you said the chassis is in good shape, but the
chassis is still in good shape. The fire truck part of it is and this truck is actually a mini pumper. We're going to replace it with a traditional brush truck, which is way cheaper than a mini pumper. A mini pumper would be way more than that.
Yeah. One other issue with that truck is it is a manual shift.
That's where I was going next. It is a manual shift, and what I am finding is it's the last manual shift in the county. And these younger generations that are coming in have never even, they see it. What's that extra pedal in the floor right there? And to me, I don't understand it, because I've been able to drive one since I could, before I was allowed to drive, and I just don't get it. But it's hard to get people released on it that have never driven one, because I'm not teaching them how to drive in one of our county vehicles. So but it is what it is. The budget's what the budget is. And
John, do you want to talk about Response 5 and Ambulance 553 for Lake Monticello?
So as a sort of a general thing, as I've mentioned previously at these meetings, there is a replacement schedule for all the apparatus in the county. We've got it planned out for the next 20 years.
So, and things that don't get funded in 1 year get kicked down the road. You're just, they have to be replaced at some point. And a couple of these have already been kicked down the road. Response 5 is a 2003 truck. It's the primary chase vehicle for Lake Monticello. It's, you know, it's still usable. It's not in terrible shape, but it is also 17 years old. Ambulance 553, on the other hand, is getting to be in pretty rough shape. Just to give you an example, the other day I went to jump in the back, and the screws holding one of the drawers, the latch to one of the drawers, had pulled out of the plywood, and the shelf had come out, and I smacked myself in the head and got a big big bump on my head because the shelf was not, I mean, the drawer had come out. It's showing a lot of wear. The chassis itself is a 2009, and for an ambulance, that's getting pretty old. We've already had, we had to replace the engine in it. It's that 6-liter engine that Ford was kind of the dog, and it's already had one engine put in it already. It needs to be replaced.
And how many ambulances does Lake Monticello have?
4. Okay.
So that's, and so like I said, the chief one, that's the one vehicle I did fund. So go and close that, Liz. Let's go down to the schools. Again, on the schools, funded the capital reserve maintenance fund and funded some projects for them. I didn't fund the computer infrastructure replacement. They had $75,000 a year in there. And I'll let Mr. Stribling talk about that, but what was explained to me, it was more in there to kind of build up for when the computer infrastructure, like a server, needs to be replaced. And instead of kind of having some things built up or kind of as a reserve fund, there's other items that we need to do this year, and those funds need to be utilized for that. And go on.
That summed it up pretty well. Okay. Thank you very much.
There we go. Carriage Brook Elementary HVAC, so that's a $1.5 million project, and it's not that I don't think it may or may not be needed. I don't know the condition of it, but again, there's probably about 3 of these projects that I think I said before, that if the board feels that these are things that need to be done, I could see wrapping those up in one debt issuance to do those. You know, one item is the Carriage Brook Elementary HVAC for $1.5 million. Next year there was $1.2 million for the Central West Central bathroom remodel. And then you go down to the Abrams building. Instead of funding, you know, little drips and drabs every year, if it's the county's intent to make that more of an operational building and renovate it, let's just do it all at once instead of doing a little bit here and there. I understand that they're putting a little bit here and there so they can hopefully get some things funded, but at a certain point, we're just going to have to decide what we want to fund and then find a way to do it. So those 3 things were the big ones. The school safety vestibules, basically secure entrances to the schools, they requested that at $125,000, and I included that in my proposed budget. And then again, they had paving and resurfacing for parking lots, just like the county. That wasn't in there. I didn't put that in my proposed budget. They're requesting a generator for the school board office for $75,000. That was not in there. And then the middle school annex floor and bleachers for $175,000. That was not in there. And then, again, going back to the Abrams building, they're requesting $125,000 this year, and then they had $125,000 next year, then $500,000, then $500,000, then $300,000. And if we're going to do that building, I say let's just get one big contract and do it at once.
Now, my one question about that would be, would we end up doing so much work that we'd have to shut it down and find another place for them to be?
Could you say that one more time?
I think you said if we try to do the whole project at one time and we can't get it done in 2 months over the summer, would we end up having to shut that building down until it is complete, and then would you have somewhere else to house Abrams?
So yes, we would have to relocate. It would not be a 2-month project. we would have to look at optional spaces. There's room, but from a technology standpoint, being able to get that done at the school board office, that's the first place that I would think of. We'd have to sit down, and if that was the direction that we were headed, we'd have to look and plan strategically for that.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but yeah. I'm sitting there. That was my thought process on that.
And then they asked for school buses. They requested $600,000. I put in $300,000. And then under student transport and facility vehicles, they requested $75,000, and I put in $50,000.
There's talk of interest rates going even further down. I mean, if we're going to borrow money, there's no better time to borrow money probably now. And with use of money at probably, I don't know what the rate's going to be, but probably under 3%. To me, it makes sense to look at that and to look at some of these projects and to actually just put together, you know, whatever, it's $10 million or whatever the case may be. And do it, you know, because it's cheap.
Well, the one thing the board could do, and I know we just had an item that went before the board tonight for additional. The board could always, well, I don't even think we could do that for the Zion's Crossroads project, but that might be a little too late down the road. Take out additional debt funding for that to free up that money to use to other stuff, or you could say I want to lump together. Well, I mean, like I said. If those three buildings need to be done, well, you could go through VPSA or something like that. Right. Or if we needed to fund a bunch of apparatus at once, you could do some type of, you know, we had great rates on a lease purchase that we did before, and you could, you know, put a whole package together that says I want to fund 6 school buses and 3 fire trucks and whatever. So we could do something like that. So
I mean, the other point too is, not only is the money cheap, but of course everything continues to go up in price. Yep. So you're going to pay more down the road.
Yep. So, like I said, if that's the direction that the board goes, we can certainly make that happen. We can put numbers together to do that. You know, the one thing we would have to do. So, in the current budget right now, there's no debt service wedge for doing anything like that. You know, we'd have to put something in there as far as what the debt service payment's going to be. So it's, you know, we're in a tough situation because we don't really have the cash necessarily to fund all these things out of fund balance. But we could do the debt service. We just have to be willing to increase the tax rate or cut something else.
And you know, we need to keep that facilities study in front of us. We don't need to lose sight of that facilities study that we have gone through, because sooner or later we're going to have to get out of all these little things that we're throwing money at.
Well, I think if relocating the registrar doesn't make you think that we're running out of space, then
right. Yeah.
You know, if we have to start paying, you know, $50,000 a year in rent, mm-hmm. in rent payments for something, you know, that's going to add up, and we're still certainly going to have future expenses, and we're at capacity. So, but like I said, I do have the admin building project kind of out there as a placeholder, but I was trying to put it out there as that big debt service payment was kind of getting ready to fall off out in like fiscal year 2022, 2023, 2024
time frame. Ready.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So that's really it for the CIP. So again, I funded $1.5 million, $400 cash, and $1.1 million is fund balance.
So I'd like to see, you know, something rolled up, and you know, whether it's, again, I'm not putting a number out there that,
yeah.
because I'm not hanging up in my head, but you know, whether it's $3-5 million, I think it's worth looking at. I mean, we've reduced our debt by $5 million at least in the last year, so
yeah,
it's going back to where we were a year ago.
Yeah,
right?
every year I think the principal drops off about $6 million.
Sure. So you go down $6 million, it costs you nothing to borrow. And it becomes more expensive to buy what you're not buying today. So that's my logic on that.
So does the board have any questions on the CIP? Obviously, at some point, we're going to have to decide, is this enough or if not, or do we you know, do we go with Mr. O'Brien's approach and put some things in there and take out the debt proceeds to do it? And we can come up with the numbers for what the debt service payment would be on, say, you know, whether it's $2 million, $3 million, $4 million, and obviously depending upon what it is. Mm-hmm. What's that?
It's on that sheet, the calculator at the bottom.
Oh, yeah, we'll go down, yeah.
Let's over, right?
Go over, yeah.
Yeah, go to the black tab, yeah, mm-hmm. DSC. Put in, just put in...
5 million.
Well, just put in a million right now, just so we can do 1 million increments. Okay, go down to, say, 3%.
This computer
and just leave it as is. So 1 million at 3% for 10 years, and I'm assuming 10 years depending upon the type of, obviously, whatever type of equipment it is, we're not gonna fund something greater than its useful life, but that's, you know, roughly around $117,000 a year in debt service, in a debt service payment. So just as a idea, that's kind of what we'd be looking at.
What's the current VPSA rates? Do you know?
I have not checked into VPSA rates in a while, so I'm not sure where they are currently at. They're usually a little bit higher, but usually there's where you do a little bit better is cost of issuance, because they kind of pool everything together, so you save in some of the closing costs and cost of issuance. So go back to the budget. And actually, go back to the budget balance sheet, Liz. So I guess we'll just kind of give you a quick recap of where we are in the budget, and then I'll have Ms. Rice kind of go through the health insurance and some of the pay stuff, and then, you know, if the board wants to look at more detailed budget stuff, we can do that, or if not, we can start figuring out where we want to go from here. So as it stands right now, we have $250,000 to the good right now. Now, the way we got there, that's from my proposed budget. The way we got there is we got a little extra real estate revenue. We got some additional personal property tax revenue. That was the bulk of the revenue. As the board knows tonight, we took the Zions Crossroads paying out a fund balance out of this budget. So there's a decrease in revenue, and down at the bottom, there's a decrease in expense. Too, so that doesn't really affect this. We increased the convenience center in revenue by $20,000 since the board just increased the convenience center fees. The schools, other local, for my proposed budget, and I'm just trying to match up to their budget, so I'm not decreasing their budget, it's just decreasing their revenue projection for their other local revenue that they have. We also included, so in my budget right now, I have a 2% salary cost of living increase, and the one thing that I did not have or I wasn't aware of is there is a match from the state for that for Department of Social Services. So, and Kim, correct me if I'm wrong, so at a 2%, the state would reimburse roughly $37,000 from your presentation last week.
We did $10,000.
Yeah, so 2% we would get,
37,962. Yeah, so in my budget, I had a 2% increase for all staff, so I didn't account for what we were going to get reimbursed from the state at that point, so that's an additional 37,000 if the board sticks with the 2% increase.
What was this, the cuts on the schools, other local ones?
So really what it is they get money. They get other local revenue. It's like from prep reimbursement and stuff like this. They were expecting to see less revenue coming in this year. So we didn't necessarily change their overall budget.
There's an offset. There's an offset down below for their expenses because they don't spend it if they don't get it.
Yeah.
So it's actually neutral.
Yeah.
But they got less money for the 40 students from the state on education.
Yeah.
So that's about $5,000 right there per student, or is it $6,000 per state? So that's that much less money that you've gotten there.
Yeah, they're getting
Yes.
Yeah, they're getting an increase in state revenue over last year, but they're down some students too. So it's if they had the same. they had the same amount of students, they'd probably have a lot more state revenue coming in, but they had a decrease.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, they've got about a 1.1 or 1.2 million increase in state revenue.
Because it didn't make sense the way it was.
Yeah. So go down, Liz. Keep on going, keep on going, keep on going, keep on. So this is the expense, section. The only thing that's changed, if you remember tonight, the board approved a contract for the E911, and remember how we said there's going to be a $6,100 a year increase? We added that amount in there. I told the board before that the Central Virginia Regional Jail, they came back with some a requested change for us board members to approve. And actually, what was in my original budget versus what's coming forward, it's going to be, we'll be responsible for $58,000 less. So that's $58,000 to the good. This personnel change one, where it said move from planning, there's an increase and decrease by the same amount in two different budgets. So it's a net wash.
No, but going down. There it is, right below it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a 62, and there's the same 62. And then we just have a couple other oddball ones. We split out reassessment and board of equalization. They used to be in one budget, but we're splitting them out. When I split them out, I forgot to add a completely separate budget line in there for that, so we had to add that $47.53 back in. And right here, I haven't added any funds in for the schools. That's for the board to decide. But the $679.146, that is their request for funding over last fiscal year. And then go down. I think that's pretty much.
Yeah.
And then again, there's an offset of the Zion's Crossroads $2.7 million. So as it stands right now, go back up to the top, please. So we are at $251,000 to the good. Now, as you remember, last meeting, this doesn't include what's going to happen with health insurance too, because until the board says this is the health insurance plan we want to go with, you know, we can then add another reduction in what's in there. Because remember, I included $68,000 for an increase. In addition to an increase, we're looking at a decrease. So there's going to be probably roughly,
$300,000, I think.
Yeah, it's roughly, plus or minus $300,000, depending upon what the board wants to do to add back into that. So technically, we could be at, $550,000 to the good right now. And, you let the board figure out where they want to go. The commissioner, throughout the process, we'll probably get a few more updates in some of the taxable values as we go on through the process. But we're pretty much at a stalemate at this point, and it's up to the board to make some decisions. So I think next we'll have Ms. Rice go through her presentation and kind of show you what some of the health insurance options are, and then we can kind of talk about, as you remember before, the sheriff was talking about some salary issues with keeping staff, and Ms. Rice and the sheriff kind of came up with a new plan to try and keep and retain some of the sheriff's deputies and be competitive with their surrounding localities. So go back to the PowerPoint presentation, if you would. And then go down there, hit that.
The brief?
No, go down there.
The brief one.
Oh. Nope, over to,
I'm sorry.
Over to
keep
one,
going.
There you go. Okay, and then go to the county health insurance, and I'll let Ms. Rice give the brief for that. Just hit the brief.
If she wants to drive, you can move over to Fred's.
Do you want to sit here, Jessica?
I'm going to drive here.
Okay.
I'll slide.
Yeah.
I'm going to drive the bus here.
That's right.
Done there.
Yep. Probably
today, even, right? So,
not today.
You're slipping, huh?
Close it.
I am.
I'm
a little slacker.
I don't know.
Just close it.
Your taxi tip.
Minimize.
There's nothing in the
big car.
What just happened? It was all there a second ago.
Where's Andy?
Yeah.
Okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Oh, Andy's on Andy.
Moving your direction. I don't know what happened. They just went away.
You're on that.
What's that?
You're on the other screen.
It's on the screen, but it won't. It's not.
I can't. I'm trying to do this.
Here, I got it. It's got it.
Whatever happened.
I don't know why it does that.
Just need Andy to come up and breathe on it. That's all.
I guess they didn't find it first. That's bad.
I got you. You got
red?
Yep.
All right, here we go.
Everybody ready?
Yes, ma'am.
So this is health insurance part two. Continuation from last week. This is just a review of what our premiums have looked like since 2014. A couple of years they went down, most of the years they went up, the last three went up significantly. And again, we went out for proposals this year after we let our third party administrator contract go. And these were the proposals that we came back with. BPA suggested a 1.3% increase, and Cigna suggested a 19.47% increase, and then the Local Choice, which is an Anthem network, actually came back with an overall premium decrease of 21.74%. Yeehaw. So I want to go through what some of the changes would look like if we do go back to Anthem, just to give everyone in the room an idea too. So Dental and Vision currently are purchased separately, and it's 100% paid by the employee. If we switch back to the Local Choice, everything is bundled and you cannot opt out of it. So everybody that bought into health insurance would get dental and vision automatically.
If you're a single health, you get single health, single vision, single
dental. You can't mix and match.
No.
You can't mix and match.
No.
One of the challenges that we had before was that an employee that didn't want to take health insurance could not just pick up dental and vision. I'm addressing that right now. I do have an option where they'll be able to buy it as a voluntary plan. I don't know the carrier yet, but so we're addressing that for folks that don't want to take the health insurance. Another thing just to consider is that because it is all bundled now, the county would be paying for a portion of the dental and vision instead of it being a complete employee expense. So another change, previously we had an employee plus spouse tier, and what that converts over to is dual. You can sign up for a dual plan if it's you and your spouse, or you plus one child, which kind of bleeds into down here a little bit. Your employee plus one child would select dual, and an employee plus two children would automatically be enrolled into a family plan. I'm going to kind of go through some different premium and billing options on the next slide to show you what all that would look like. Another nice feature to the Local Choice is that the employee assistance program, which is counseling, budgetary, legal, stuff like that, we are paying a contract right now of over $3,000 a year. This function is included in this package, so that's an additional savings on top of the health insurance savings.
And what does that do? Say it again.
Employee assistance program is designed as a counseling service. They help with minor legal, like wills, and it's available for you and anyone living in your household. They'll help you with financial planning. It's an outside resource that the county pays for to assist employees with life, basically. This is the fun part for everybody. So I'm gonna try and walk you through what we did here. This yellow column right here is the current premiums everyone is paying, and it's factoring in your current health insurance and if you selected the most expensive dental and if you selected vision. So this is your worst case scenario going on right now. You can see employee only, employee children, and then all the way down. We looked at four different options of how this might play out with some of the changes to the plans here. The first one would be if the county agreed to pay the same percentage of the health insurance. And if you come down through here, this looks like a pretty decent option. Most people would see a health insurance decrease, except for anyone who is on employee plus two or more children would have to jump to family. And you can see what that increase would look like for some folks. It's pretty significant.
Yeah, so the one thing that we did, we had about 15 or 20 folks that are on the employee plus children, so we had to do some, one, we had to show you just some of the same percentages and the same contributions, and then we have an option three, trying to show you a way to offset some of those hardships moving forward with those employee plus children having to go to a family plan.
On the bottom.
How many people do we have that would fall into that category?
It's about
currently. 15. What is it, like 10 to 15?
Yeah, it's about 15
something
to 20.
Like that. So this here, if you all were to choose a setup like this, this would be the savings to the county because we're talking about budget right now. Okay. The second column here is if we kept all the employee premiums flat. And the reason I included this in here, I'll share with you, we did a week-long survey of all the staff that talked about health insurance versus pay. And the question to the staff was, if we were able to keep your health insurance flat, would you prefer that with a larger pay increase, or would you prefer your health insurance to go down? 91 responses came in, and 76 people said they would prefer to be held flat with a higher pay raise, and 8 people were undecided. So the reason that's the reason we looked at this. So if you look through at least 3 of these tiers here, everybody's held the same. Again, the issue with this column is that you have the folks that have employee plus 2 or more kids on here.
But the just so we're clear,
sure.
That's a net.
So this
right
one
now,
here.
In other words, you have to take the fact that let's say they're paying $99 right now out of pocket,
mm-hmm.
and if you're doing the $248 for the same program there, it's really $148. $149, right? Because they're already paying $99. So it's a $149 increase to them.
Correct. That is devastating to many, many families. We're not actually recommending either of these two, but I need to spell that all out for you what that looks like.
Well, I was going to say, the yellow one, then they'd be counting on us to give them a much bigger pay raise.
Potentially.
I mean, if
there's different ways to approach this.
If we're going to keep it level, and give you a bigger pay raise.
There's different ways to approach it.
We'd have to give a much bigger pay raise.
Column 3 was adjusting percentages to try and help alleviate a lot of that gap. And if you look across, you're looking again the yellow to the pink, decrease, 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 all the way down. If you're an employee plus one child, you're going to see decreases here. If you're an employee plus children, you're going to see a decrease if you're HDHP. And unfortunately, we can't do an even swap 500 to 500 or 250 to 250. But you do have an option in there to change tiers and still be held harmless if you need to.
Yeah, if you
this
look
is kind at, of a middle of the road.
If you look right here, if
option.
if you're employee plus children at a 250 plan and you have to go down to, I'm sorry, you have to go down to here, you would be at 568 if you want to stay in the same plan. If you want to go to a family plan, you could be at 379. So you get the benefit of
at a 500 plan.
Yeah. Yeah, you get the benefit of including your spouse in there as well. Now, this is a tough thing with this one,
mm-hmm.
because this family plan, because we're actually paying a higher percentage for the family plan to account for the employee plus children going
that
to the family
now.
Plan.
Yeah.
So some of the people that are currently on the family plan, they would see a significant savings per month right now, like almost over $200 a month. Those folks that are in an employee family plan, it's just that one group of the employee children that we're not really sure how to get around that with while treating everyone fairly. You know,
I do want to talk about that one.
Yeah,
yeah, you don't want to get a phone call that says you got to write a check for $1,800.
No.
So option 4, this is a little bit more tricky, and this is designed to be an internal billing process. process rather than an enrollment process, and I'll kind of talk through that a little bit. We would still have all the same, like if you had an employee plus two children, your Signet enrollment is still going to be family. However, we would treat the billing differently than if you were being billed for your whole family. You gonna make it over there? So if you take a look at this, what actually these two things right here, what the proposal would be is that this tier now becomes employee plus one child, and this tier becomes an employee spouse combo or an employee plus multiple children. And the reason we do that is because obviously two adults or multiple kids bring on more liability than just the employee plus one child. So the employee plus one child ends up being billed less than the employee plus multiples or the employee spouse. But if you look from here to here, we were able to hold everybody harmless by doing this. If you look across, everybody is held harmless. It does create some tricky accounting, I would say, on the county's behalf for as far as setup goes. But once it's in place, I think that it's something that we would be able to manage as far as billing through payroll.
The tough thing with this, though, is...
Well, there's your this. Savings is that's low. Part of it.
Well, you have a lower savings. Yeah. And in addition, so one, we are creating a whole separate plan that our insurance company doesn't even provide. So we're basically paying... You're paying a higher premium for different individuals than you normally would. I mean, you could do the same thing. You could say, well, those 15 people, we're going to give them a higher salary increase, but can you really do that?
No.
Out of those 15 people, how many of those are on the 250 plan versus the 500?
There are...
I want to say there's not many. There's four or five.
There are about four or five.
That are on the 250.
Yeah.
Yes. So this is kind of what the bottom line would look like. From a county recommendation standpoint, I would not recommend either one of these two. And the least harmful options to staff are obviously these two. This one, we're not able to hold everyone harmless, but they do have an option to switch tiers if they so choose. And then this one, again, it's just an internal billing that would change this, but they would still be enrolled in whatever the plans that were offered. So
what's the high deductible plan with Anthem? I mean, what is the deductible set on the high deductible?
It's the same, $2,800 for single and $56 for family. So any questions on that, as confusing as all that is?
So the original savings that we talked about several weeks ago.
It's basically right here.
It's right there.
Okay.
It's option two. That's basically, if you just keep on paying the same thing that you're paying for staff.
That's what I thought.
That's what it is.
But I don't know how to make it right for the folks that have multiple children on their plan. And, you know, I think it was in front of this group we talked about before, what we're looking at is the greater good here, not just, you know, we're trying to hold everyone harmless if possible, or at least minimize the effects of it, and we're doing the best we can with the numbers that we have. So
does the board have any questions
on
this, or any recommendations? Because we went through a lot of things. I mean, because that's
painful.
I think for overall, when you look at everyone, probably 90% of the staff see a significant savings. But you've got a small handful that could be held harmless.
Well, it seems like it's savings over what we have now.
It's by far savings over. And that doesn't even consider the 20% increase. It was going to be increasing $357,000.
Right. That's what it is now, not
correct. If we want to stay with Cigna, throw this away
and
start
and
add $350,000.
Yeah, add $350,000. So I mean, we're looking at $700 savings. $700,000.
It's a transition year, and this part is probably complicated and difficult. And I think that in future years, this will get a lot easier as we move forward with it. Even if we see a swing savings increase a little bit either way, at least we don't have to go through and redesign plans and stuff. So next year should be easier than this.
And the one thing with the Anthem, the local choice, I mean, and you can let staff that are, you know, staff could chime in, you know, and there's some, this is, it's not going to make everyone happy. But with Anthem, the local choice, over the years, and when you look at our counterparts, because it's such a large pool, I mean, it's basically how many counties? It's a large percentage of Virginia counties that are in Anthem Local Choice. You see, if you see increases, they're nominal increases. Some of our neighbors and counterparts have had, you know, single digit increases over the past couple years. Well, I'll take 3 years worth of single digit increases versus 1 year of an 18% increase.
Mm-hmm. So, 3 years in a row, double digit.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Y'all have heard me say it before. I mean, last year I had to go from $250 to $500 deductible.
To make it work for your family.
Said, "Hey, I'm not the bearer of bad news. Don't shoot me, but yeah. You got to bring a big check over here if you want to keep your same insurance."
Yeah. So the current Cigna plan has an employee plus children plan.
It does.
It does.
And don't they on a per child basis?
No.
It's all lumped together.
Yes.
Wow.
One child, two child, three children. I don't know if there's
So I'll tell you, the idea for breaking this out was suggested by the school's consultant. I had met with him. He gave us the BPA quote. And he said, you know, there are people that are doing this and there are folks that are on the local choice. But I'll also say breaking it out into these tiers where you lump the employee and then the multiple children, that was Albemarle County. When I first saw that, and I said, I never really thought about doing that. But that's exactly what they do too. Now they're not with the local choice, but they actually charge premiums where your two adults equal adult plus multiple kids kind of a scenario. So all good ideas, tried to incorporate it into just one thing here, so.
We were discussing is the option of, at least I would suggest, if you are on the 250 plan, that option basically be eliminated for those people that are on the employee plus children.
Yeah, in order to be held harmless, they would need, especially right here, they would need to select a different tier.
Right. But the net cost to the county, were it to true up just those other 15, you know, the 50 employees there.
Sure.
It can't be that much expensive. If it's $357 right now, taking that option and you trued up the other people,
right,
you're looking at maybe what, spending $40,000,
$30,000?
When you say trued up the other people?
Well, in other words, you give them a salary increase.
I can't give a target pay raise based on the health insurance that somebody selects. I think almost legally, I don't know that I can do that.
The board can, but what's that saying if you give?
Well, I mean, I've always argued, you know, the fact that the county is paying such a, you know, an enormous amount, you know, for the 250 plans.
Yeah.
And really, you know, the you know, 18, you know, if you're a single person, you're getting, you know, what, $692 for, if you're looking at a 250 plan,
yes.
that's what the county contributes to you, you know, for your well-being. But if you happen to have a family, they're going to contribute $1,800, an extra $1,000 for that individual. I mean, you're getting $1,000 or a $12,000 raise over the other person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and that's
we've
that's,
discussed that.
That we've discussed that, yeah. And that's the thing with this. For the option three, in order to make those people with the employee children as close to hold harmless between a salary increase and the insurance. Now there is a benefit of going to the family possibly if someone can add their spouse to the plan, but we don't know that for everyone. So there could be a benefit that a spouse gets off their other employer plan and they come to the county plan. But like I said, it's difficult. Everyone sees a pretty dramatic savings. If you're talking that there's a salary increase, and right now in my proposed budget there's 2%, and there's overall a decrease for everyone else. I mean, like I said, in order, as I was saying, to make the children go to the family plan, we had to lower what was happening on the family plan. So those people, I mean, to your point, is they're seeing a greater benefit because they're saving almost $200-some a month by being on a family plan in order so we can make the employee children almost hold harmless going to that. So you are, you know, it could be said, are you giving a greater benefit to someone on a family plan?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the other thing that we haven't added in is the fact that they now have dental and vision.
Right.
Which they didn't, or potentially paying out of pocket for them. So,
right.
You know, how much of a differential is it if you're going from, you know, a single there at 414 to, you know, now 615. So it's a $200 difference if you jump up to the $500 plan. Am I looking at the right? No, I'm looking at
where you're looking.
No, yeah. you would go from. So
let's say you're the 250 plan there with right. Employee plus children.
Yeah, 414. So if you want to stay in the same plan, you would have to be at 568.
Sure. Yeah, but
if you wanted to go up to a 500, you'd be at 379 on the family plan, so you'd be less.
Right, right. If you're doing option three, if you're doing option two.
Correct.
Then you're paying $200 more.
Mm-hmm. So here, yeah. Just click on my.
No, I'm sorry. You would pay $800. You would pay $400 more in that example if you stayed at the 250 plan. But logically, you'd say I'm going to go to the 500 plan.
Just go. There's nothing there. It should open up right to the. So go over to the.
Yeah, that's why I didn't.
No, it's fine. There's no one there. So this right here. That shows what the savings is versus Cigna's current plan. So this takes into account everyone that's on preventative, everyone that's on comprehensive on every single plan, and this shows the average of what is being paid for each one and what the average is. So if you look at single, the single folks under that current option three, everyone's saving roughly between $17 to $30 a month. Keep on going down. So again, we go back to the employee plus children. You know, if you compare someone that's on the HDHP preventive dental, we have four people on that. If they stay on the HDHP and go to family, they're saving $32 a month. But if you take that same person on a 500 preventative and they want to stay on the family plan under that same tier, their premium would increase $94 a month. But if you go down to employee spouse, a little too far, up one more. I mean, you know, all the employee spouses, you know, there's reductions there. And then if you go under
family,
yeah, where did the family go?
This is it.
Okay, yeah. If you go to the family, I mean, you can see in order to make those employee children hold harmless, we actually had to increase the average percentage that the county's paying into it to hold them harmless. So some people are going to save $250 a month. Plus you're getting a pay increase. So I'm not sure how we make the switch from what we have now, unless we go back and say, you know what, we're going to leave everyone's premiums the same and we're going to pay a higher salary increase, and then you figure it out. You choose what plan you want to be on. But there's going to be some folks that are, it's not going to be beneficial to them. It may be detrimental for some folks.
Sure.
So that's where the insurance stands right now. That's where some of the options stand. I mean, we can go back and look at some other things, but just let's go back one slide. So just so just remember. So, you know, the bottom numbers, you know, anywhere from 187 to 357 is the savings, and 357 is basically
everybody pays the same premium.
Everyone pays the same premium
except
That's not true, though.
Well, it's not true.
Employee and children get...
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Big time hammered.
Correct.
Yep. Okay. Let me see if I can...
I'm sorry, go back to it one more second, please.
Sorry about that. Where'd it go?
Just you close it. Just open it back up. Just go back to the... Just click on that. And then click on your health insurance, the brief.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you have to be in slide mode, presentation mode.
Go up. I can't even see it right now.
Right there, there you go. And then click on brief again. So, yeah, go to the county pay plan.
All right. This, I just have a couple of slides to kind of go over with y'all. We do show this every year just to kind of reemphasize how generous the board's been with pay increases going all the way back to FY13. These right here are across the board cost of living increases. And then these are years where you've actually done targeted raises to address some of the market comparisons that were done or internal equity. Just a reminder, whenever we apply a cost of living increase, this is for employees who have a start date before March 1st of the current year, as was approved by you all in 2018. Okay, for this year, these are the numbers that I believe Eric showed a few weeks ago. This is what the cost to the county would be at a 1%, a 2%, and a 3% increase.
This is
taking into consideration any reimbursement from the state also.
Yeah, because my 2% was at $168,000, and now as Jessica, she added in what that 37 from TSS reimbursement is. So that's what the actual kind of total cost is. So if the board wanted to say we want to do a 3%, it's another $66,000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This year for targeted raises, we are mostly requesting to focus on the Sheriff's Department. I think you've heard this for the past year straight. So if we had funding approved, the Sheriff's Office would be bringing forward a pay plan. It is separate from what we're currently using. The pay bands would be different from the rest of the county staff. And this is to address our recruitment problems that we're having and also making sure that we can keep the deputies that are trained in here. Yeah, exactly. And that would be a BOS action item on the agenda. In exchange for this, or at least to offset it a little bit, the Sheriff's Office would actually be relinquishing some of the special pay appointments, at least one master deputy, a couple of the FTO positions, and then all of that other certification pay stuff that got a little muddy in the middle, that would be going away. So this is a very clear-cut way to adjust deputies to where they should be based on their years of service and their education level and things like that. The sheriff and I spent some time, a few times actually, going through and trying to design a pay scale, pay plan that would work and show internal equity and help avoid compression when we bring up starting salaries, which is something else we looked at. Currently, a deputy will start off, one that's not certified, we are only offering about $35,000 a year. And the new pay plan would bring them in starting at $38,000 a year to help get them in. The other thing that's in that pay plan, and we've talked about that before, is that that would include a shift differential for folks that are working nights and weekends because they don't get the 8 to 5 schedule, Monday through Friday, that other folks do. So, the sheriff's office accounts for about $67,000 of this number. And again, that will address all the compression issues that come from adjusting the pay bands and stuff. So the additional county staff target, we are asking for about 2,800, and that is just for staff to kind of balance what the market is calling for, and also internal equity here with general county staff. Questions so far with those
numbers? And that money's coming from?
That is a request from you all during this budget process.
That is not in the budget.
That's not in the budget.
That's something for the board to consider if
I'm still asking the question, then where's that money coming from?
Tax rate.
Either comes from the surplus that's there, or you comes from increasing the tax rate, or you cut some other expense.
So this chart, again, is your cost of living increases all the way up to 1% to 3%. And this is the target raises added to it, what that total amount would be. And as a note here, you have $168,000 already built into your county administrator's proposed budget, in addition to $68,000 built in already to the county administrator's proposed budget. And that is without factoring in any health insurance decrease that we're expecting.
So that decrease that you had on there didn't take
it. It does not take that in there.
No, the $251,000, that's not including whatever decrease for health insurance you put in.
No, so if you add these together and subtract it off of one of these, that's our actual ask, what we're looking for.
Yeah, so right now, my budget basically at this point is the 2% 133.
Right, and that's a decrease of $33,000 on your budget.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I'll leave that slide up if you guys want to look at that.
Yeah.
So that's actually the total ask this year.
Yeah.
As far as target raises, like I said, 99% of it is focusing on the sheriff's office, solving some of those issues there, with just a couple of this internal staff here.
Does the board have any questions on the pay plan?
Any questions?
No.
Close that out, Jessica.
I am going to let Liz drive again.
Let Liz swap seats.
Yep. Which one?
Escape, but don't close this out. Just minimize it, because we may need to go back into that. So go down, close this, and then go back into the Excel document.
Which one do you want to copy
out? I was just thinking what the increases and decreases are.
217.
If they want to say, I want to go from 1% to 2%, or 2%,
3%. I can go print that.
Yeah,
can I print from here?
Just to show go.
I can do it.
Yeah, so.
500.
Yeah, right now we're at 251. If you, whatever health insurance option you pick, that adds the 251 to the good.
Right, yeah, right. So what are we doing now?
Well, at this point, does the board want to get into figuring out where we go from here? I mean, because
or do we want to go back and look at it on our own and then come back next week and attack it? Because we're next week at what time?
I think let's go to next week, and then if any staff
would that,
wants
would
to
that be
to
good
us,
with y'all? I mean, that gives you a week to look at it, and then chew on it a little bit. I mean.
Do you want us to give you maybe the health insurance slides to look at, or we can email them to you, or
yeah, on the health insurance,
or the pay stuff.
Yeah,
I just wish there was a more creative way, because I know that we could probably take that $300,000 and get it down to like $260 and still save money over the other.
Well,
plan,
that's
there.
Plan two is the $260.
Plan two was the $357.
That leaves you $260.
Yeah,
leaves you $357. Yeah. plan
well, to? Well, so the option one was we pay the same percentage. So every plan goes down the same percentage as what we're paying, but the employee children, they take a big hit. And again, the paying the same amount that we're paying right now, the employee children take a huge hit, even worse hit.
Something you
send
us
a slide.
Yeah.
I mean, but I think, you know, if I, and again, I don't know Jessica enough about what the law says as to whether you can do that, but I mean, if you had conversations with those 15 people, maybe five of them say, oh yeah, I'm going to put my spouse on it. So they're saving money there, right? Yeah. Because they didn't have a spouse on it before. And if they were paying for the health and the dental, and that's fine. And if, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, you're at the 250 plan. It's the most expensive plan. Go to the 500 plan, you know, and yeah, you have some choices there, I guess.
As individuals, we run our household like a business, just like we're doing here with our budgets, and we do have personal decisions to make, and we can't, as a county, always hold everyone harmless.
Of course not.
We do have an option to do that if the board chooses to do that this year, and so sometimes people do have to make different choices. And you know, for myself, even last year, and I will use myself as an example, I had to jump to an HDHP plan to try and not have an insurance increase, right, because of Cigna and all of that went on, and it was a personal decision. And we're all in the same boat.
Several years ago, we did away with the 250 plan, and I don't know what the reason was, but I know during that time a lot of people hit some major medical bills, and it was all out of pockets. I mean, there is a big difference. And what you say, if you have a child with an appendectomy, you better get ready to come up with $6,000. How long you work for the $6,000 to offset that? It's roll the dice. I mean, you can go, or you can go all the way down to, you know, the bare bones.
I get hung up on the whole idea.
There was like two slides past.
Trust me, I'm on out.
So I had an idea. What if we gave everybody the same dollar amount to spend? I think you were fine.
Yeah, we talked about that.
And we talked about that last year too. But again, the effect on various people is different.
Well, if you're in a family plan,
it's like, here's your allowance, mm-hmm, and you can spend this as you see fit for your family between your health insurance and your volunteer insurance. In private sector, you can do that. Public sector is a little more difficult. So, but yes, that is another way to look at it too. Mm-hmm.
All right. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
We have another page.
Marianne's bringing it, but yeah, okay. If the board wants to adjourn, we can do that.
Do we have a motion?
So made.
Second. Motion's been made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye.
All in favor?
Yes.
All opposed? Chair votes aye. We are adjourned.